live from the Snook River Grill, Real Racing USA. Back on the airwaves, I'm Rick Angies.
I'm Bill Green.
This is Rush Limbaugh here with you tonight, filling in for Jack Smith.
Dittos.
Absolutely.
Dittos.
Wow, what a weekend.
We are the well-traveled Real Racing USA, I would say, wouldn't you?
What a weekend.
I'm telling you, man. First we end up...
I don't know about driving all night across the entire state of Florida makes us well-traveled, but it makes us damn tired.
I'm telling you, man. It was a long ride. We end up four blocks from Daytona to a pit stop at the Hess station. And then I couldn't believe we had to wait in line to use the bathroom at the Hess station.
It was Daytona, man. It was like qualifying
day. I guess, whatever, man. Yeah, I can hear the cars when we come out of the Hess station.
Yeah.
But then Volusia County, that was a trip right there, man. That was a blast. Those World of Outlaw guys, Jack and I were standing at the fence when they were doing qualifying when Kinzer went by. I swear to God, Jack, when they come down that front stretch, there's no way they can turn that car.
No, they're not turning.
And then the first cars that came out, that first car came around the turn, did his lap, got his second lap, and as he's coming down the front stretch, they pushed off the second car to qualify while that guy's still full bore coming around turn three.
Yeah, it was sort of like the Circus du Soleil or whatever the hell.
And you got to run full bore down the backstretch.
It was crazy, man.
On your cool down lap to roll into the pit to get out of the way for the guy coming around.
Place was packed.
But, you know, Bill, and the trailer they had set up for the World of Outlaws.
Holy cow.
Was that a media center or what?
What a technical piece of crap that must have been to have to put together.
What a nightmare.
Oh, my God. It's got a satellite on top. It's got all kinds of antennas because it is the scoring room. It has 7 video
monitors.
screens, monitors, and a big TV.
Well, I got to tell you,
high def, big 52-inch high def TV.
And they all can tell you exactly, as soon as you look at any one of them, you know exactly who's on the lap, what lap they're on qualifying or anything else. It tells you all of that scoring stuff.
Before Bill breaks the equipment over there fooling around with that stuff, I got to tell you guys, you know, I've been, like, this is my 10th year doing Carnax. We've done, like, had dealings with traveling series from one end of this country to the other. I have never yet run across a traveling series that was more accommodating to the media than the World of Outlaws.
They searched us out when we got to the track. Tony V up there on top of the trailer adjusting the satellite dish there, and
he did everything. He was kind of like the gopher of all gophers, man.
Bill's got us tromping.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Tromping across the track while they're getting it ready. Sliding down the front stretch.
And they've made some improvements at Volusia in the last few years.
There's some awesome machines they used to do that track, too.
Yeah, it is. Semi-trailer with those big mudders on it.
It's a big, wide tire thing, man.
So then we get, you know, they start qualifying 51 cars. So we said, well, TBRA's at...
We can catch the A-Main at TBRA.
That A-Main thing.
Whose idea was that? Oh,
sorry. Well, I think you wanted to hear qualifying on your Cirrus radio.
Well, no, I want to check in on it. But that
so we don't have any guests tonight. We're not going to have any guests. We're just going to sit here and mumble jumble for about 120 minutes. And then,
Hey, do you guys have a comment on the fines and things that were handed out at NASCAR?
I thought we were still not finished talking about Newsom Ernie yet.
Go ahead. I just realized that a minute ago I heard about their two...
We can talk about NASCAR in a minute, but
okay.
Yeah.
Two crew chiefs at home. All that
we got over to New Smyrna. It was a treat, man. You know, you could actually walk through the pits without either sinking down in the mud or
a treat.
Or having...
he calls it a treat, you know. But when we were
it
there,
was great.
When we were there at the back gate, Jack was turning red.
Oh, quit it now! Quit
Jack
it.
Was
quit
turning
it. Quit
red.
It now.
He was not a happy camper.
You don't want to go there.
He was not a happy camper. Did you get that straight now?
Yes.
All right, that's a good.
Straightened
thing.
Out in my mind. That's the only thing that matters. Yeah,
well, now you got a
new surface.
When we got to Joe was very.
Oh, it was great. It was a great night.
The guy that runs the track.
It was a great night for everybody except those folks running those. They were having a little bit of problem with the TBA air tires on the new surface. But
we got one of the guests.
Yep.
Our guest in the house.
Oh, we are going to have some guests.
Yeah,
tonight.
We got DJ Hosel here tonight, and he's going to talk to us about his adventure, first adventure.
Yeah, he had
in the sprint. He had an adventure too.
Some might call it a misadventure, but it was an adventure.
We have liftoff.
And 22 you know, late models for the 30-lap race, super
yeah,
late models.
Yeah.
Awesome run. Kevin Ingram won the limited late model race. And why would anybody in the state of Florida start Mike Fritz up front?
Dun, I think that's how they do it, by qualifying or something.
Dun, dun, I don't dun, care. Dun.
Yeah. If he's up front at New Smyrna in a short race, he's going to win.
I would smudge the clock or something.
If it's got to be at least 100 laps for anybody to have a chance.
We get there and we're standing up on the hill over there in turn four, watching Jim Jones be a lunatic standing out there on the track.
We had Jim on our show a couple of weeks ago.
And then we look over and there's Don Nerone standing there looking like a proud papa looking over that freshly paved racetrack.
Yeah. And he had a bunch of race cars. They had to do a B main in the TBRA.
Yeah,
it was a good night.
So they had a little bit of a problem with the tires there that night. But then the next night they were back. Last Sunday night they were back over there.
We were there Sunday night.
I mean, Monday night they were back over there. And I talked to Don Ream, the president of TBRA, this afternoon. And he said the surface wasn't nearly as abrasive.
Well, that's because all the cracks got filled in with rubber.
David Steele didn't show up because he thought it was going to rain, so they packed up and left.
Right.
So they didn't run Monday
second
night.
Second night?
Yeah, second night. And
Was that their first points night also, TBRA?
No. Citrus County on Saturday night they raced, and David Steele won.
So they count
won.
All these as points
races. Yeah, David Steele, all their races are points races. David Steele won over at Citrus County as he won. He always wins over there. Then they went to New Smyrna on the night we were there, and that was Troy DeCare.
Yeah, they had David Steele starting 11th in that race, and he came to third, I believe, or second.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that when we talk with DJ Hosel later on this evening.
Yeah,
who are some of the other guests we have on tonight? We do actually do have guests.
We're going to talk to Danny Schatz. Danny Schatz of the
Donnie Schatz all the way from Fargo, North Dakota.
We're also going to have the Gershner. Jeremy Gershner is going to stop by and talk with us.
We have a moth flying around the studio.
Yeah,
how
another
crazy
bug.
Is that?
That's how we get bugs in our computers. Right.
Penthouse.
That's where I was headed next. I was kind of figuring out how I wanted to get there. We're going to talk to young man.
Bill, careful now.
Hannigan. We're going to talk to Hannigan, and Hannigan has the Penthouse magazine as his sponsor, and he tells me when I talk to him briefly that they come out of Houston, Texas, and will fly the girls in to several of the races this year to do promotions and do subscriptions to the magazine, that kind of thing. But he's going to have Penthouse playmates around his car. This cannot hurt your image at all.
And we also have long time late model digest photographer Buddy Bryan on, who's got more stories than and anybody should have.
We also are looking for. We're going to get a couple of calls. It sounds like I know. We're hoping to hook up with Steve Arpin, the Open Wheel Modified Ace, who came down from Canada, has been winning a bunch of races. He won.
Ace. Somebody should pay him to go back up to Indiana or Wisconsin
to go away.
Or wherever
he's won almost everything. Huh? He's won almost everything out there, and that's pretty wild. So we're talking to Steve Arpin. He won the two nights up at North Florida Speedway. He won three of the four nights at that must have been out of five nights. He ran five nights at
six out of seven.
Yeah, he got six out of seven races. Two of them were North Florida Speedway, so the other five were over across the pond there at Volusia. And he only lost the first night
to Kenny Wallace.
Well, yeah, but he got wrecked in the heat race. And he had to come through the B main and come from the back of the pack and wound up finishing fourth in the A behind Kenny Wallace. Kenny Wallace taking the first night's racing, and then he had to go do his thing with NASCAR. Couldn't get back out there, I guess, any more nights. So it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of racing going on. This is the time of year leading up to the Daytona 500 when everybody runs their Speed Week programs to get a lot of folks down here, and they're doing it.
Ocala Speedway, the 3/8-mile track up there at Ocala. They had their annual blue-gray modified race there. It's a couple hundred laps, I think. Yeah, 200-lap race. They had 39 entries.
Not bad.
And I guess they started 30.
So nine guys had to load up.
Wayne Jefferson was just, like, way fast.
See ya.
And, yeah.
Imagine
the only,
that.
I think from what I understand, the only way he could not lose was if somebody wrecked him and a couple of people tried, but...
Well, that's nothing new.
We'll get to that a little bit later.
They've tried to do that many times to that poor guy.
Matter of fact, what do you got over there, Rick?
Rick's hanging
out. You're just
him.
Talking about Ocala. I just happen to have on the phone with us right now the Rocket Man, Wayne Jefferson.
Hey,
Wayne, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, all right, man. How y'all doing?
We're doing fine. Why aren't you down here spending that money with us?
Yeah, right. Saving it so I can go race at DeSoto, you know.
Hey. It must be a good start to your season so far.
Yeah, it's real awesome, too, because we just put together a new car that Norma and Chet, they're the owners of the team, had bought. So we spent most of half last year putting this deal together, and it was the first race we ran on it. In fact, the first lap we got on it at all was when we got there. So
It sounds like
be pretty good.
Sounds like a good start, that's for sure. What's next on the list? Who you're going to conquer next?
Well, we're going to head over to the Icebreaker there and probably do double duty there, run the Gulf Coast modified race, and then we're going to run the Icebreaker 125 with the late model.
Now, Wayne, this race right here, the blue-gray race, all the cars that were there, the competition that was there, this has really, really got to be one of the top wins in your career.
Yeah, it definitely was. That's what I said as soon as it was over. I think probably in modified for sure it's the biggest win as far as that goes, and money won too. So, yeah, there was like 37 cars there, and they started 30. You know, like 10 of them guys from, up north, Indiana, Ohio, all around that area. So, in fact, one of them guys there was one that took the lead there early and led the first half of the race, and I didn't get by him until the beginning of the second half of the race. So there were some pretty good shoes from up there, and it was Dempsey was there. There was a lot of good guys from Florida, all the regular Florida guys. So, I mean, it was a pretty good field.
So with the competition like that, now the track, though, it was Ocala, so it had to be a special race.
Yeah, definitely, because that's a driver's track as far as I'm concerned. Anybody that's ever raced there knows how it is, and then it's just a tough little place to get around. And some it takes to some and not to others, and it's a neat little racetrack. And I definitely was always, before I ever been there, wasn't too sure about it. How, you know, I always heard horror stories, and the first time I ever raced there, actually, I won a modified race there, so it's been something that kind of just came to me there. And we ran the race last two years, and just had some bad luck, but I finally was able to do it this year.
So you're getting ready for the Icebreaker, going to pull double duty. How much super late model racing and modified racing are you going to do this year? Is that what you're going to concentrate on, both those classes, or mostly
in
the super?
Yeah, we're gonna race basically as much as we can with one or the other. We got a lot of late model stuff scheduled. Going to be down at DeSoto, trying to make as much of that as we can. We're going to run a Triple Crown at Lakeland three times. We're going to try to get to New Smyrna a couple times, one being the Governor's Cup. We got big plans there. They're putting some, you know, money into the effort with the late model, and we got a new shop, and it's going to be a big deal here this year with that. And I got to thank JTW Racing for that. And then, like I said, I just got a brand new car and a modified, so we're going to be doing everything that we can do in between than when we're not late model racing. So whatever Gulf Coast, whatever it is that we can do. So.
Hey, listen, we got one of your old foes sitting right here in the studio with us, and DJ Hosel has dropped by to say hi. He's gone sprint car racing, but DJ remembers getting up against Wayne Jefferson and running some good races, huh, DJ?
Yeah, definitely. Wayne's probably one of the toughest competitors you're ever going to race against. And not only that, he's a great driver, and he'll make you work for every inch you get on that racetrack.
Hey, Wayne, you remember having to do some duels with this guy?
Oh, yes, I do. He's been one of the hardest I've ever had to race against. And just like he said, likewise, you know, I looked at him the same way. I didn't even realize for a long time that he's looked at me that way. You know, it's just a little respect for, you know, drivers that know how to do it and know what it takes to be out there doing it right. I congratulate him on the sprint car deal. I know he's had some bad luck here, but I know he'll get that stuff turned around and really show us what he knows how to do in that thing.
Hey, listen, I was thinking maybe you slipped a little money his way through one of your sponsors or something to get him to go sprint car racing.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping, but I see it's not. I don't know if he don't want to hear that right now, I'm sure.
Okay, Wayne, who's got some of the sponsors on that race car?
On that late model deal, we got JTW Racing. Right now, we're looking for some sponsors. We had lost the sponsor we had there last year, Tax Solutions. And the owner, John Johnson, is pretty much going to be funding that deal right now. And then we're really looking hard right now, though, to try to make some stuff happen. So we'll see what the future holds there. And as far as the modified, DT Racing is the name of the team at Norma. He owns it and pretty much covers it, you know, for us to just go racing here and there when we like to. So, I got to thank them for most. You know, I wouldn't be doing it at all, basically, anymore if I didn't have somebody paying the bills.
All right, Wayne, it's great talking to you, man. Good run there this past weekend at the Blue Gray at Ocala, and looking forward to seeing you at DeSoto.
Yeah, all right. Thank you guys for calling me and having me on.
All right, brother.
Take care. Yeah. Wayne Jefferson, there's a good shoe right there, man. That is a good drive. Well, I tell you what, now, looking for him and some of the other folks that will be coming to the Icebreaker, that could turn out to be a really good Icebreaker. And it sounds like we've got some really cool stuff brewing for the Icebreaker.
The Icebreaker?
Yeah.
DeSoto Super Speedway. That's one of the big first big late model super late model events in Florida. And I think you're going to have a little special deal with the Grand Marshal, Dan Toler.
Yep, Danny Toler.
Dangerous Dan Toler. Former guitarist for the
That'll
Allman
be
Brothers.
Awesome with Danny Toler.
Allman Brothers Band. Greg Allman Band.
Oh, yeah.
Dickie Betts and Great Southern.
We've had a blast with him.
And he's played with just about all those great Southern rock bands. He's going to be out there and be a Grand Marshal.
What kind of music you listen to, DJ?
There you go.
Jeremy
Gerstner, what kind of music you listen to?
Country, all the way. Country, definitely.
Oh, well.
All right, then. Yeah. How you doing tonight, man?
Excellent, bud. Excellent. Wish I could have had a little bit better news to tell you after Blue and Gray, but other than that, doing excellent.
Now, you went up there and raced for them junkyards, huh?
I wouldn't say it was junkyard. I'd say they had 38 cars, and I bet there was about 36 top-notch teams there. I mean, really impressed me. There was a lot of guys from up north that, you know, there's probably about, I'd say, a good 18 to 20 cars from up north and 18 to 20 from, you know, down south. So it was definitely the real Blue and Gray challenge like it's supposed to be.
All right, give me the good and the bad. What did you figure out that you actually look like you're doing okay with, but what was the holdup? What do you think you got to improve on to get a better result next time?
Basically, you know, we qualified good. You know, we practiced all day very fast, and of course the track cooled down, and we ended up qualifying fourth out of 38, which, you know, we expected we were like a top three car for qualifying, and then getting the race, and then just kind of, you know, being we had so many laps around the track, we were just hoping to wait them out and be there at the end and try to get us the first blue-gray win. But unfortunately, we rode in second for like 80-something laps behind a guy from up north, the number five. His name is Dave Stacey. Very, very competitive guy. You know, wasn't about to come down here and run second. He came here to win for sure. It was evident about that. He kind of, I kept working and working, and he kept, you know, using the brakes to brake check me. But basically, I ended up getting sideways, and a couple guys swept by me. A couple laps later, I got on the binders to keep from running over a local guy, Robbie Cooper, a good friend of mine, and lost it. And they got sent. I got the guy tapped me from behind, trying to finish me off, but. So they sent me the rear, so I made it for a long event. But we had a good time, and we came back up to 14th. I mean, you know, brought the car home in one piece. There was a lot of guys that didn't, you know, couldn't say that. I bet there was only like 17 or 18 cars finished out of the, you know, the 30 that started.
Well, I tell you what, it's an awesome opportunity to get to see you and all those cars go at it. What's up next for Jeremy Gerstner? Are you going to be able to come down to the Icebreaker, or you got some other plans?
Actually, no, we thought about that, but we got so much going on with this. You know, this year we're going to be trying to run, we're campaigning to run the ASA South. We're going to go for Rookie of the Year and try to win the championship, of course. But, so, you know, we got a lot of things going on. I'm trying to rent the track up there at Bronson with Mike Cope. And a couple weeks here, we're going to go up there and do some testing. Been working with left-hander chassis. He's trying to get a good setup and get the car geared up to be a, you know, top three qualifier. Because, you know, qualifying at Bronson is a real testy thing there, because if you can get up front with the crate motors, it's not a lot of extra edge with motors passing. It's all about, you know, just kind of waiting for your turn in line, hoping someone to slip up in front if you don't get up front on a qualifying issue.
Well, who's helping you out? Who's getting you ready for that ASA run and the rookie run?
Right now I got KD Construction out of my local town, Wesley Chapel here, and also have a Custom Concrete. I got a couple associate sponsors. I picked up Beef O'Brady's for hopefully this first race, and we're trying to get a major sponsor. That's the only part of the team we really don't have established yet, is the financial part. We have the, you know, the people with the know-how and the go-getter to want to try to, you know, to win this championship and travel the whole series, but we're definitely going to do it. We're going to run the all, you know, 11 races that, you know, for points, and we're going to try to run the 12th race at Nashville for the final. We were kind of hoping to try to run in the mid-season to go to Bristol, but I'm not sure if that's going to be acceptable this year. But we just got to try to mainly just compete with 11 races that are in points and do the best we can, so next year we can run the Challenge Series.
Cool. Hey, Jeremy, let's go back up to Ocala for a minute. Give us a rundown of like how that race went. Like, give us a, you know, a good 3-minute synopsis of how did that race play out.
You know, I tell you, the race started, you know, Troy Robinson, he's a very fast car. You know, he's somebody I compete with every week up there, and he's always been, I have to say, he's one of the two or three top dogs, you know, other than myself.
And he actually spun the tires on the start of the race because it was cold tires, and he has an incredibly, you know, good car with a lot of horsepower. And when he spun, I started on the outside, second row, and like I said, the five and myself, we jumped out and got out front. And Dwayne Dempsey actually worked his way up there pretty quick. He's a good competitor too. And you know, basically he rode behind Dave Spacey for a while. He tried him, and he ended up getting put out by the five. I think it knocked the suspension out or something. So, you know, basically everybody was pretty clean, I'd say, the first 100 laps. I mean, it went pretty caution-free. Of course, you know, the closer it gets to the end, people get a little more impatient. And, you know, then it started getting pretty much, I mean, you know, it was actually for, you know, you could tell there was a lot of professional drivers that was in the race. I mean, it wasn't like a regular Saturday night show, but it was definitely something that, you know, went very, very well as planned, you know, for ourselves. My brother, actually, he had worked his way up to six, and his battery kind of conked out on him, which was something that's not really heard of for, you know, my brother, because usually he's got his car prepped pretty good. He just had an issue. I guess the car sat so long in the shop, because he only raced like twice last year. My scenario is, I think it's just the battery just got weak on him. But I'll tell you, Mike Peters ought to be really proud of the show that he had up there. I mean, he had a lot of fans from up north and a lot of cars from up north, and to get that many people, you know, in one track, I mean, 38 cars. I mean, that's probably more than any touring modified series has ever had, you know, down here, and that's for like a major show. So to have that many cars, I think Mike should be really impressed and really happy.
Did some of those guys who maybe aren't so familiar with that track have a little bit of a trouble? For those people who may not know, Ocala is like a little like Concord. You think it's a lot like Concord, huh? It's a D-shaped, scary turn four.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I kind of based Ocala, it's, like you said, it's exactly like Concord. Only thing is, I think Concord's got a little bit more banking, but I would say that, you know, that's definitely a driver's track. You got to be on top of that wheel all the way around. If you can master Ocala, I think you can go just about anywhere and run. I mean, I traveled quite a few different tracks with Sarah, and, you know, when I originally first went to Ocala, I didn't like it. I mean, my brother still kind of to this day says it's not one of his favorite tracks, but I think it's just more, instead of a big horsepower and you know, make a U-turn and go again track, it's more about getting the car handling right and really having to be on top of that wheel all the way around. But I think for the most part, the guys that came down when they first got there, they had the same attitude. They didn't really care too much about it. But then the more the race went on, after the race, I heard a lot of guys saying, you know, I didn't do so hot, but yet I really had a good time, and it was a great facility, and, you know, we had a good time. Everything was great. But I think, you know, probably like I say, Mike Peters is really turning Ocala around, and I really hate to, you know, this year I'm not going to be able to run there for points. I'm going to be traveling, but, I mean, we're going to definitely try to make it there as many times as we can with the modified, and, you know, as long as we have it, because we're going to probably try to sell it. But as long as we have it, we're going to definitely try to make it there and have some fun locally too.
I appreciate it, man. And you know what? It's really good. As you were telling me all that, what is your brother's name again?
Yeah, John Gosher. That's probably people haven't really heard too much about me in the spotlight over the years, because I've always been trying to help my brother, you know, succeed in racing, because I've always known he's had the patience, and he's an excellent driver. Just about anything he climbs in, he's a top-notch, you know, driver. So it's like, I mean, now here lately, the last 5 years, I've really turned it on to try to do my own thing. We built, you know, like I said, a 7,200-square-foot shop in Wesley Chapel, and, you know, got a double-car stacker now, and we're trying to really give it a good valiant effort for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years and see how we can make out.
Well, I was going to say, you know, what's really cool, as you were talking, I was thinking it is so wonderful to see. When Sunshine Speedway closed a few years ago, there's so many really great drivers who raced for years at Sunshine, and it's really good to see all you guys, Wayne Jefferson, yourself, your brother, and lots of other guys out there still getting it on and doing a great job entertaining fans around Florida, and it's really good to see, and I appreciate you taking the time with us tonight. Bill, did you have something else there?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I wanted to find out from Jeremy. Jeremy, what kind of things did you do in the off season outside and away from the racing? Did you do anything special, something different that takes up some of your time?
Actually, I mean, I did a little bit of sport fishing every once in a while. I mean, and, you know, basically, I'll tell you, this off season wasn't a very long off season, because we decided at the last minute, at the end of the year, you know, I had a super late model that we raced every once in a while, but then, you know, we had to actually heard about the ASA South, you know, being a big up-and-coming series, and you know, I talked to Ron Varney a little bit, and it really turned my interest in with the whole crate motor deal, because, you know, last year I bought like a $22,000 or $25,000 Baker engine, went to New Smyrna and Lakeland, and I still couldn't keep up with them. So I felt like, you know, in order to be competitive, you know, as far as the driver ability and handling, I'd rather, you know, turn to this crate deal. And since then, I've just been, I mean, really wide open on just trying to focus on trying to get the, you know, the exact setups, what the parts we need to be competitive, and getting these crate cars put together. So I got, you know, one already pretty much done, and the other one's going together right now. Well, to run 11 competitive races, we definitely, this is far we have to travel to Odessa, Missouri. You know, I think it's going to definitely be something we need to do.
Well, that's cool. Are you a catch and release kind of guy when you are fishing, or are you just?
Yeah, I'm not really too much a fish eater, other than maybe a little bit of grouper here and there. But I definitely enjoy, you know, just relaxing to get out there and fish. I mean, I own a landscaping company, and that's very overwhelming. So when I do get away from racing, you know, just something to relax, it makes a great thing.
All that's right, cool. Jeremy, if we don't get out of here, they're going to be feeding us. Our sponsors are going to be feeding us to the fishes, man. Great spending some time with you. We'll talk to you soon.
Great, guys. I hope to see y'all at the track sometime. Thanks again.
Jeremy Gerstner, ladies and gentlemen, appreciate him dropping by.
Up next will be Bill Dance with his new fly fishing techniques.
I just thought it'd be kind of cool if people find out what they're doing behind
Real
the scenes.
Real quick, Vic, we'll Bill, before we go to break, Bill.
We're already there.
Oh, okay.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jefferson, driver of the number 1 open wheel modified and number 94 super late model. And you are listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Dishonest Cable TV Hooker Upper.
Mr. Dishonest Cable TV Hooker Upper.
On any given day, somewhere between 9 and 4:30, you arrive ready to bring us the world. And for an extra 20, you'll bring us porn.
Naughty, naughty boy.
Hey, you've already got the van and the jumpsuit. Why not get into criminal activity?
Just a naughty boy.
After all, what are they going to do? Throw you in cable jail?
I don't think so.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, manhandler of the Scrambler, because isn't it about time someone hooked you up?
Mr. Desiris, cable TV hooker up.
Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
What was that Bud Light commercial?
You
had a big announcement before we went off the air, and I missed it.
That's right.
You cut me off, Bill.
Yeah, well,
all right.
He cut me off. I've got to call into my manager during that break, so you guys will hear about it. Just
go for it.
In
political news today.
Yeah, two cars were stolen from East Bay Raceway between midnight and 6 a.m. last night.
Wow.
They're both Buzzard race car chassis. Both cars have Hamilton machine engines with valve covers stamped accordingly. One belonged to Kenny Carlton, has a purple frame, white body, number 21. and then the other was Mike Sullivan. It's a black frame, white body, number 12. Both black open trailers with Indiana plates. If you have any information, call the Hillsborough Sheriff's Office or Brian Holyfield at 941-725-2166.
Open trailers.
Any information would be helpful.
Brian who?
Holyfield.
But they were open.
Is that the guy we know?
Yeah, Pirates Cove, Brian Holyfield.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What's his involvement?
I don't know.
He just knows.
Okay, you folks out of Miami around this, where the boats come in and out, keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, but these were open trailers, you said. Is that true?
Yeah, somebody had to see these race cars going down the road. But, of course, now you got to remember, we've been on the road these last two
weekends.
That's right,
and it's Winter Nationals.
These
so they
last
expect
two
to
weekends,
see
we've seen lots of race cars
lots
going
up
and down those roads.
But
so.
Absolutely. If you see a white or purple race car going down the road, period, on an open
12
trailer,
or 21.
Call somebody.
12 or 21
well, yeah,
is the number.
They'll start scrapping stuff off of them as fast as they can to keep them looking like that. Wow, that's unbelievable. Two of them. They got two different trailers at the same time. Then you got to have two vehicles, enough people, and so forth to do that. That's just that's amazing that they would go to all that trouble to be all set up and do that. Hey, listen, he briefly spoke earlier while we were getting ready. He started when he was 5 years old in go-karts, jumped right into modifieds, I think, when he turned about 18 or so, it seemed. Ran with the Sarah Series in 1999. Was a champion in 2001, has just about beat up on everybody in the state. Everybody knew when he rolled through the gate that he was coming prepared to go racing and to win. And it's always nice to talk to DJ Hosel. DJ, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Now, Sunday, it was your debut in the TBARA, basically.
Yeah, it was debut, but got over my wings real quick.
Well, yeah, but you got through their heat race situation that they do and so forth. You learned a lot. You changed the car. It looks like you were ready for the feature event, and they just got caught up in somebody else's stop fast, you run over them kind of thing, and you went airborne. But tell us about your experience with the TBARA so far. How's that been for you?
Well, the experience has been great. All the people that are involved with the series are good people. You know, we went to Citrus the first night on Friday, did some testing, ran Saturday night, and, you know, I'm learning what these cars are going to do from day to night, and we were real tight in our heat race, and went in the B main and missed us by one spot, so we didn't get to race on Saturday night and came to New Smyrna, and learned a lot in practice, and I knew going into the night that the cars were going to tighten up, so... We made some adjustments for that, ran the heat race, and missed transfer by one spot. So we had to go in the B consi. So I ended up changing both front springs, a right rear spring, gas pressure in the shocks, and also changed tire pressures. And the car was perfect. We ran real well, pretty much put a straightaway on the field. Got into the main event, had to start last because of rookie status. And first lap on the backstretch, everybody checked up. I wasn't prepared for it and jumped the guy's right rear and took off into the right or the turn three fence. So
we have liftoff.
Yeah, total.
Now I got to ask you, how's the transfer been? Has it been what you thought it would be? As an open wheel driver for quite a long time, knowing what those feel like, how fast they react to turning and what's going on with them and weight transfers and stuff, has it been a whole lot different way out there, or can you take some of what you have learned and transfer it over?
Well, you can definitely take what you've learned and transfer over. Setups and stuff are a little bit different, but the basics are still the same. The biggest difference is the seat position. You sit straight up, so it's got a totally different feel, you know, through the driver and the input that you get from the car. You got a lot more rubber on the racetrack. You got a huge wing that changes the downforce, so, you know, you can move the wing backward or forward a couple inches, and it'll change how the car drives. So, yes, there are similarities, but they're so fast. They react to everything. And when you get behind a car, you get turbulence off those cars. So your car is constantly changing throughout the whole run, and you've got to anticipate a lot more than any other cars because they do change.
Not a good thing to have wheels touching, huh?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's kind of sad because at Citrus on Saturday night, I had a similar issue, but I didn't find the fence. But New Smyrna, you're going a heck of a lot faster, and air took a hold of me and took me a little further.
Is there a huge difference in horsepower between what you ran in the open wheel and what's in this sprint car?
Well, when I ran the modifieds, we ran the stock motor deal the last couple of years, and yes, there's a huge difference. I did run some of the fast car stuff where we had basically an open motor roll with the gear roll. So that was the only
damn
difference.
Jack. Calm
go,
down.
Go Jack, go.
Yeah.
What is? Do you have time to think between at New Smyrna Speedway, half mile, pretty good bank track, okay? Do you have time to think at all between turn four and turn one?
Not much at all. I mean, it's basically all instinct.
It's like that,
huh? Exactly. I mean, these cars are you can't even explain how fast they are. And, yes, everything happens extremely fast.
You can't explain how fast they are.
Yeah.
Because I can't get my head around it.
His B main Concy that he took off in, I kind of started watching laps on my watch, and it was only taking about 3.5 to 4.5 seconds to get out of one corner and down to the next. And that's all you got. And if you got a bunch of people in front of you, no wonder you run over.
Yeah, you know, as a fan, man, you're trying to watch this when they start to feature, and there's 24 cars or whatever out there. It's like, you can't watch these cars.
Yeah, the last car is still like, getting a green flag.
Well, it's
when
like
the
in the infield.
Out of two.
It's like a vacuum start.
Oh, yeah.
when you're in the infield when they're going around.
And it was the coolest. I only saw this off one car, but I'd heard this. I'd never seen it. I saw it.
Jack saw the contrails.
Dave Steele's going down the front straight.
The vortex.
That 91, right? Is that his car?
Yeah, 91. Yep.
91. And there's these, like, jet trails coming off the wings, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And when you looked at it, his wing was up high, and that's why it caught so much moisture and pushed it up into a small corner. You look at somebody like
Butler,
the Pink Panther, Keith Butler, he had his almost flat on the ground because he had a different shock set up, and he was trying to keep it out of the air and go faster. And he was quick.
Breathtaking.
But it's just amazing.
Yeah, talking about the wing now, you know, you'd come from open-wheel modified ranks. There's a lot more to do inside that cockpit of that sprint car, isn't there?
There's a lot more to do. That's one of the cool things about this series. Number one, you have a wing adjustment. You also have a weight jacker. There's a lot of different things you can do. And like you said, everything happens so fast. Even when I was running the laps in New Smyrna, and the first heat, I was a little bit tight, and I was over there cranking on the weight jacker. And by the time you come out of turn four or turn two, you reach up, put a couple of cranks on, and you better get both hands back on the wheel because you're in the next corner real quick.
Oh, you're doing this while you're driving around.
While you're driving.
Adjusting the wing.
You're driving around track 140 miles an hour, and you're making changes to the race car.
Adjustments to
right
the
hand,
car.
Right
get
hands
out of
on
here.
One knob, and then you put your right hand back on and reach over.
And you're making
the
sure that Wendy Mathis isn't running over you.
Now, Wendy did a good job.
Always.
Man, good job.
Josh,
oh, always.
I could have said anybody. I have no think of her. But
that was the thing I liked about the series. I mean, even after I basically totaled my car, you know, Wendy came over, asked me if there's anything I needed. There were several competitors that said, anything you need, you're welcome to. And you know,
Troy DeCare, I think.
Troy DeCare came over. I mean, he actually asked me 4 or 5 times, and even when I came back the next day to return a couple of parts I borrowed, you know, are you sure you don't need anything? So it's a good feeling to have that. And it's set that way in most racing, but not to the level that I've
you
ever seen.
You should have run to each trailer the second night and looked nothing there and gone, anybody got a frame?
Yeah. Well, I need more in a frame.
Three races, and they've had three winners. I'll tell you what, we're going to come back and talk with you just here in a little bit. Hang out with us.
Cool. Thank you.
Well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, okay.
Oh, so come back means come back.
We're back now.
Yeah.
We got Strolling Nolan with us.
Strolling Nolan.
All right. You know, there was a little quarter-mile track up in Albany, Georgia, been around for a long, long, long time, and recently changed ownership. And the man we're going to talk to now, Jerry Nolan, also known as Strolling Nolan. I think this might be the guy to make Albany Speedway, which has had its ups and downs in recent years. This might be the guy to make it happen. What do you think, Jerry?
Man, if I had an applaud machine, I'd applaud you for that.
Well, Bill's supposed to be doing the effects, and he didn't get it on in time.
Well, he needs. If he don't want his colon swollen by swollen, he needs.
There it is.
There we go. Sorry about that. But that's what you got to tell him sometimes. Yeah, we got the old Suicide Circle Speedway. Bill Farnsworth, the Beefo Grady, looked at the track with me and said, "You want it?" And I said, "Yep." Yeah. I've been here with everybody that's had the track for the last 9 years, and either filming or either announcing, and said, "Well, I want to run it." And I know where all the mistakes have been, and figured we need to change the name of it to a real popular name that came back in 1950s with Suicide Circle Speedway.
Tell us a little bit about how long you were around this track last century sometime. Tell us about your way back around there.
You talking about when I was a little boy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I had one chin and had a flat top. Now I'm bald-headed with two chins. And I was 9 years old, and Suicide Circle was through the woods from my mom's house. And I kind of ride my bicycle down there, and the track had been closed down for 3 or 4 years, and it was just like old washboard. And it was me and old buddy of mine, Claude Stone, and old Sonny Blake. We'd ride our bicycles out there, and we'd act like we was racing. And I said, one of these days, we'll get to see a race, because we always got to see clips of races back then. And I said, you know, just a dream of mine to see a race on Suicide Circle. So just luckily through Beefo Brady's and the opportunity to buy the old Albany Speedway and rename it Suicide Circle Speedway was something unique, and it's taken off. I talked to Ken Reagan today and down in Daytona, and he said that people around Daytona's hearing about it right now, because this was a track 1951 and 52 that NASCAR, some of the NASCAR drivers stopped here and drove on this track. And I talked to D.E. Short, was the driver back then, and he said that when the NASCAR boys came up for that 100-lap race, he said they was all they had was a ringside seat because the NASCAR boys put it on them, you know. And I've had some interesting stories from some of these drivers. Sam McQuigg won the Firecracker 400 in 1966. Well, he's going to be at our track grand opening, you know.
That's pretty cool.
That ain't digging no drivers up. These are still alive.
Now, Strolling Nolan, this is Bill Green. I got a question to ask you. Now, is this the old Albany track that was the asphalt track, or are you dealing with a different track in the Albany area?
No, it's a quarter mile, 11-degree banking on the front, about a 13-degree banking on the back straightaway, and it's a quarter mile, the fastest little track in the south, and the drivers love it.
Dirt?
They love this track. No, it's asphalt.
Okay.
I like to do dirt on it. If it's asphalt, okay. Field don't work.
Yeah, you got air conditioners in the bathroom, correct?
We got air conditioners.
This is Albany
Speedway, yeah, that I went to. That's
okay.
What I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the Albany Speedway that the fast truck program came to about
a
year
ago. Right, the fast truck was here.
Yeah, that was my. I was the announcer at that point with
yeah,
them.
Yes, yeah, I was talking to Don Ream, the president of TBARA today. We've been talking about them a lot tonight, but. Well, I was talking to him today, and I was telling him a little bit about your story. He said, tell you, you guys need to talk, because he wants to come up there with his crew.
Bring him on.
Yeah, the TBRA Wing Sprints, they'd have a blast up there.
Yeah, I had a Wing Sprint called at USAC, I guess it was, and wanted to come. They've run here before. They turned that track in 11 seconds.
What's the fan base and the drivers? What is the state of racing in the Albany area these days?
Well, it's been pretty poor. You know, the track's been up, been down. Tim Pafford built that track back when it was first built and had big crowds. I mean, the people stomping the bleachers, it was something. It was awesome. And then we've just had, from there, it kind of went downhill. So we figured we're going to do it with a new attitude and a new personality and win the crowd over. We got to win the drivers over. And like I told these drivers, if I tell you it's raining, you get your umbrella out, because we're not going to holler woof, woof. There's going to be one there if we holler it. You know, we just want to have a good thing here and have a good time. A lot of family-oriented things going on. We're going to have a mud track, drag. We're going to have a drive-in movie over there on the other side of the track.
Okay.
How about that?
You're going to have a multi-purpose race park, but you're going to have a drive-in movie as part of your program to be able to do some things during the week that keeps income coming in the program.
Right. In other words, if you want to come and watch a race and you want to pay $3 more, go through the gate, go over there and sit down in the concession area at the movie and watch a movie. Watch a movie, get tired of fogging up the windows, come over here and sit and watch the races. You know, that's what we want to do.
There you go.
Now you didn't buy the drag strip on the other side of the road, right? You just got the circle track.
No, man, we don't do that kind of thing.
I know. I just wanted to make sure.
These sparks fly. We didn't.
I didn't know if you was going for the whole gamut, going to wind up with motorcycles jumping in the backyard too or something, and going to go for the whole motorsport park.
Well, that's what I did for 18 years.
I thought maybe that was part of it.
I did that, and Bubba Blackwell's a real good friend of mine that's, you know, breaking all of Knievel's records.
You have a very unique grandstand area, as there are seats to be set in. The tower sits back quite a ways, I felt. But you have another section that is just kind of like tiers of concrete, and people bring their own chairs. They bring their own stuff.
Right. Well, you can back up to the fence of these here. And then the reason the grandstand set back is because there's actually a pipeline goes through there, and that's close to they let them move them. And we, you know, we got the Musco Light and the same thing they got at Daytona. So, I mean, you can find your contacts at night out there.
Oh, no, it's a beautiful track. I mean, I loved it.
That's
I like the way they come on the track, and right beside that is the exit and the tech shed, everything. It was just a nice little place.
We got it to just like it was. As a matter of fact, we're doing a facelift on it right now, painting the wall stripe. It seemed like it looked like the cars go a lot faster around there. You know what I mean?
When it's
solid white. Sometimes
they go by stripes. It looks like they're moving faster. He's right, because that's the way they used to have. That's why they put the red and white on East Bay for years.
Oh,
like
you can tell.
Well, how to tell how fast the car is actually doing, just like at Daytona. You sit there and spin around on your motor home and say, man, they getting it.
Yeah,
but no. If you look straight ahead of you when they come by, and you know, you can't even tell the car number.
Now, how many people can you sit?
We can sit right at 5,000.
5,000, okay.
Well, that's according to being love or not. We can sit 10,000.
Well, you don't have no little old track now. You got a big, real deal speedway there, man.
We got it to where we're selling entertainment.
Yeah, and you got one corner where you can still back your pickup truck up to the fence almost and sit right there in it. You can be up in the grandstand.
We call that the wheelchair section.
Yeah, and you can stand up in the grandstand area and sit on your chair and watch what's going on. They got great concession stands that are up there behind them.
And you can cook out. We sell hamburgers, hot dogs, all that stuff, but you still bring your own grill. We're not greedy.
So when do you get started? In March sometime?
March the 3rd. We got the vintage cars coming. See, that was part of this whole plan, being Suicide Circle Speedway. We're bringing everything back to the era it was back then, you know. And the vintage cars are 55 Chevrolets, 32 Fords, stuff like that there, you know. And matter of fact, we got the Harvey Jones car that's running there. I know everybody knows who Harvey Jones was.
Yep.
They've redone his car. And, I mean, redone and built a car like his and Sam McQuigg's and a few more. I've got Harvey Jones being there. Eddie McDonald's going to be there. He used to drive Gold 90.
Wow.
And D.E. Short. And I even found an announcer for this speedway. He was 93 years old. He's still alive. And the track was actually built by Mr. Buck Gear, is who had it. And I found their family. I did a lot of research, and we're trying to do a Ring of Honor unveiling with all the past and present drivers of Suicide Circle Speedway and I-75 Speedway out of Valdosta, you know. And I found a book where some of them they got paid big money for first place back then, like $27.
Wow.
That's a lot of money, you know. Back then it was.
So your racing program during the year is going to focus on the, you know, the basic back to the grassroots kind of racing?
Yeah, we're going to do that. I mean, look here. We're even going to have the old grudge races. We got two guys don't like it. Let's put a grudge out there. Let's let it go like we did in the old days.
When you were talking about that, it reminded me, like down here in Florida, you know, Citrus County Speedway up in Inverness has every week, week in, week out throughout the year, they have the highest car count of any track in the state. And they don't do a lot of gimmicks or nothing like that. They just have, you know, your backbone, what one another promoter calls the backbone divisions, but they got the street stock kind of classes, you know, the hobby stocks and that sort of stuff. And they do run late models, but they don't run them every week.
Yeah, we can't do that every week because you can't afford them.
But they just have real basic kind of classes that have been around forever. And
well, we're doing the legend cars, and we're going to do the pure street, which is going to be super street and pure stocks running together, you know. We got to build this crowd base back up with the cars and what we're having. We got tracks, you know, within 100 miles of us, and somebody have 7 late models or 7 super streets, and somebody have 12 super streets, or you have 7 pure stocks, and some other have 4 pure stocks. So we decided to put one big group together, change the tire, no tire rule, just DOT tire, make sure you ain't soaked it, no nothing, no glue or nothing like that, you know. And we got a sniffer there to sniff the tires to see if you're cheating. And, well, let's put it this way. You got cheaters and losers. So they're going to cheat somewhere. You gonna...
No doubt they're cheating in NASCAR. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
hey, listen, how late will your season go? Do you know kind of how long you're going to try to run and then hopefully Mother Nature works? Or...
It's never too cold for us to race.
Are you going to go into late October, November?
Oh, yeah. We October, November, and right on up till take Christmas Day off. We had Santa Claus there this year.
Have you been involved with, say, in the last 15 years, have you been involved with the racing, like as far as working with any of the tracks or anything like that, or is this right out of the box here?
No, I've been involved with racing. I've done some filming for independently for the Speed Channel for some Winged Outlaws, stuff like that. And also used to be years ago Jeff Gordon. We got our own Jeff Gordon down here. That races the Florida Pro Series late model for RV1 racing for Anthony Tucker. And me and Jeff's the one that came up and said, let's do the Suicide Circle, name the track that. We're sitting there sitting around, you know. But his daddy used to work with ASA, used to drive ASA, JT Gordon.
Yeah.
And JT died in a race car. He had a heart attack leading 100 lap race and 20 laps. He pulled over and died. But
hey, listen, we got folks listening from Cordial, Georgia, Albany, Georgia, Atlanta, Brunswick, and Jonesboro, wherever that's at. We got a lot of folks listening from around that way. What kind of things you want to tell the fans that maybe haven't come back out to the track yet and want to take the opportunity to come back out and see you? What kind of stuff?
Just come out and see us. Tell, I mean, you try to support us. Look at our website. You know, that's the first thing to do is our www.suicidecirclespeedway.com. And a good old buddy of ours, Tommy Cole, keeps that thing up and doing a good job with it. And the people around Brunswick and Waycross and over there around Douglas, Georgia, they got a big race going on over there, man, the 24th. Good gracious alive. I heard Blumenquist might go over there and sling some dirt and sand. But just all them folks, we'd love to have them. I mean, if we had to, we'd come get you. You know, I mean, we just want you there. And I want to see everybody come in our speedway with a smile. I want to see them leave with a smile. You know, reputation all man's got, and I want to keep mine good. Yeah. We had people slinging stuff on.
Hey, Jerry, let me ask you this. The reason I ask you that about it, how long you've been doing this with the other tracks, is I'm curious how do the owners and the promoters and the stock car tracks in Georgia, what's the level of cooperation between the track owners? Is it what's that all about up there?
I don't know. We need to share with each other. You know, I mean, like running Legends, for instance, if we got a half a dozen, another track's got a dozen or whatever, we need to get them all grouped, and I'm willing myself to run some special Legend car races on Friday nights and let another track have them on Saturday nights, you know, at least once a month, and then vice versa with them for me.
Do y'all have meetings? Is there anything like that? Do you know about that? Do the track owners up there get together from time to time?
I met with a couple of them a few months back. I don't want to really mention their names because they was really trying to set me up. they want me to run on Sundays and then run Saturday nights where I wouldn't have none of their cars, and I kind of put that together.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole other show. Tell us about your TV show you do.
TV show, Strolling with Nolan in the Outdoors. I actually fish for a living. That's why I make a living, and I've been doing it for 18 years. Been sponsored with Pepsi-Cola, Eagle Claw Hooks, Daiwa. Different, you know, a lot of different sponsors. It's kind of they got me as rated as most to watch a local fishing show they are. It's full of humor and comedy because humor is all we got left. Everything else has been taken away from them.
I got a cousin in Warner Robins, Georgia that watches you religiously.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Well, he's retired military, and he's got a little skeeter bass boat, and he loves to go out there and pretend he's hauling, but he does it every time I go up there to visit him. We get in the boat. We got to do 100 miles an hour across the lake, stop, and fish. Yeah, stop, and then fish.
Yeah, you can't get your fish that fast. We fish also with 10,000 kids a year.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, because our kids are our future. And that's like I've had people say, well, you're not going to run them bandoleros. Yeah, I'm going to run them bandoleros. Them little kids got the right to drive, too.
I love it, man.
You got to have that. There, look here. Reed Sorensen, David Reagan, Joey Logano, they drove on this track here. Reed Sorensen won two Winter Nationals at this same track we're at right now.
I tell you what, man, it sounds like you got it going on. I wish you all the best, and I hope it all works out. And I hope you can get maybe you should be the catalyst, man. Just jump in there and say, listen, call up the other tracks. Say, let's get together, especially the ones that are close to you, and let's work out some programs and stuff together where we can make it happen.
Of course, I'm willing to do that. I would like to work programs that where we help each other. You know, we don't need to hurt each other. There's plenty of room for all, just like the fishing shows. I'm not jealous of another man fishing. I ain't worried about another man fishing. I got people call me wanting to start a TV show.
There can't be people backstabbing and fishing. Come
yeah,
on.
There is. Yeah, there is.
There are too, man. They'll cut you a line. And
that's right.
And won't tell you the truth about nothing.
I'll tell you what, Jerry, we'll hook up with you here in a month or so, and we'll check back with you from time to time, see how things are going, and hopefully before 2007 closes, we'll be up there. See
you. You got an open house. You can come anytime, and don't forget March the 3rd, we turn back time. Blast from the past. Suicide Surfer Speedway, let's go race.
All right, Jerry, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Keep shining.
All right. Jerry Nolan from Suicide Surfer Speedway.
We have done
Speedway.
Stupider stuff. Let's hit the road. We can go to Albany, Georgia. We'll be back
Outlaws
right after
this. Are coming up.
Sure. Real Racing USA back in a minute.
Okay, you're listening to Real Racing USA, real race talk radio at light speed.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jefferson, driver of the number one open wheel modified and number 94 super late model. And you are listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Hey, we're back. Real Racing USA right here at the Snook River Grill, 2505 East Manatee Avenue. You are welcome to join us any Tuesday night between 7 and 9 p.m.
You can call us, too.
Yeah, call ahead, call in, whatever you want to do. If you're out there and you want to talk to us, talk to us.
941-748-3490.
And if you're interested in going to Daytona International Speedway for the Daytona 500, right from Thursday from the 150s right on through the Sunday race, and you want to stay in your camper, your RV, in the infield by Lake Lloyd, by the coolest, you know, all kinds of stuff you get. It's like a $3,000 package. Taylor Andrews is stuck with his because he can't go now, so he's willing to give it up for pennies on the dollar, so to speak. So give us a call if you're interested in going and hanging out.
You can get a heck of a deal. If you call before 9 o'clock, you can get a really big deal.
And let me tell you, and Taylor always goes first class, so you know he's got everything. He's got meet and greets with several drivers. He's got all kinds of complimentary meals and so forth involved. No telling what you get to do with the Dodge people and so forth, because that's what he does, sells Dayton Andrews Dodge.
He don't sell Toyotas.
No.
You know, Bill, we have a few minutes before we're going to talk to the Outlaw guys right after the break. But are you going to go with me next week to the or this coming Saturday to New Smyrna Speedway for the Pete Orr Memorial 100?
Saturday?
That's right.
Ooh.
Saturday night.
Yeah, I guess I could try.
Absolutely.
That's another night away from Charlotte. But
As a matter of fact, we're going to do an award thing with the PDOR, the annual PDOR Sportsmanship Award. We're going to present to somebody we think is pretty deserving of it. Should be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I guess I can try. Maybe we'll get lucky.
Hate to twist your arm and take you to a racetrack, man.
Well, no, but we're talking what's going on in my life. I got to keep things going the way I'm going sometimes. But
hey man, we go down to the casino.
Yeah, the only other time I'm going to miss, I think that I know of, is going to be March 17th. I'm going to go to Peach State Speedway. So I guess I can. We'll figure something out.
I'll twist his arm, and then next week Rick's got to go back to the real world of work.
Yeah.
Announcing over at DeSoto Super Speedway in Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah, the icebreaker sounds like it's going
to
be a lot of fun.
So it looks like so far we have an invitation. We have to make it to Albany, Georgia, but we also have to go to Nashville.
Yeah, I heard that. I want to go to I got three places I want to go. I'll go Jennerstown, Greenville, Pickens, and I also want to go and see racing at Crossville Speedway in Tennessee. I didn't see racing.
Bowman Gray Stadium.
I got a tour of Crossville, Tennessee in the middle of the night. Cost me a steak dinner.
Yeah, that's up there in the mountains. Yeah, Bowman Gray Stadium in Winston-Salem.
Yep. No, Bowman Gray would be cool, too, because of the way he runs those races.
15,000 people come to watch modifieds go beat up on each other.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they run for trophies in some of those lower classes. I've got to see how he runs that. It's going to be awesome. Well, I tell you what. Right now, we're going to take the opportunity to talk to one of the guys who has really been burning up the World of Outlaw sprints lately. I mean, last year, 17 World of Outlaw wins. 8 of 9 wins in Australia. He's like won, I think in Australia he's won 5 $50,000 sprint car international races. He came into town and he's leading the points going out of town, so to speak. Man, what an awesome, awesome kickoff to this season too. Donnie Schatz, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
I tell you what, man, you are on fire, brother. You just carried it. I don't know what you did during the winter besides Australia, but you didn't let up no matter where you went.
Well, I hope you call it on fire. It's you know, when you want to race at this level, you're kind of expected to you know, to perform, and we're just in a situation right now where everything's kind of gelling, and even with new crew members and new team members, you know, it's just been fun. Actually, right now I'm as pumped as I've ever been to get back in the race car and to get to the next race.
Now, I got to ask you, they've cut back from their normal 108 to 110 shows in a year to about 86, it looks like, or 89. Is that giving you any more time to be with Erica and Savannah and do some things you want to do, or are you just having to eat, sleep, and think racing most all year anyway?
Well, when I'm at home, I'm always trying to do things to, you know, to see if I can make, you know, situations better, and always trying to make things easier for my race team, or as easy as we can within reason. And, you know, I get to spend a fair amount of time at home. I'm generally home during the weeks and, you know, fly out race day at noon and, you know, we're there at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock and, you know, come home Saturday and afterwards, at least the, you know, the first couple months anyway. But, you know, even though you're home, you're, like I said, you're still pretty much focused to the job at hand. And even when the season's over, you're already have next year already lined out with cars and equipment and all the stuff that it takes. In fact, that's, you know, right after the Knoxville Nationals, that's when all that happens. So it's kind of a year-round thing, and you just have to put that into your life and keep your normal life rolling and try to fit the racing into it.
Donnie, Rick Angie's here. The level of competition in the world of outlaws is just unbelievable. This past Sunday night, 51 cars qualifying for the A-Main down there, and, you know, you winning a championship like that, that's really got to be a special feeling.
Well, you know, anytime you get more race cars, you always wonder how many new guys you're going to get that are going to kind of put a thorn in your side. And, you know, with what happened to the NSP, a lot of the guys from there come back, and you know, a lot of them are real good racers, and you know, any of them can win on any given night. It's just what they do every single night. So you know, it's good for myself and my race team to be in the situation we're in right now, coming off a championship, you know, just attacking every race one night at a time, and it's really the coolest situation you can be in, because you know, we've won a championship irregardless of who was there, and you know, we've been one of the fastest cars in the country the last year, and you know, here we are again, you know, picking up and going to places that we weren't very good at last year, and starting off just with our A game. So it's actually really exciting, and we're really pumped right now. I got one of the best race teams I've ever had, and when you have that, you can get in the car every night with complete confidence, and I really have a lot of fun with my guys, and that's probably one of the most important things. We can joke around, we can have fun, but when it comes to racing, we all know what's at hand, but you still have to be able to joke around and have a little fun from time to time.
Man, there are so many questions I want to ask you, and I want to make sure I get one of them in, and that is, what kind of things will you do when it comes to your daughter, and will she get the opportunity to go racing or anything, or is she just not interested at all?
Well, I'd love to get her involved in it, but I'm definitely not going to force it on her. You know, she's kind of mentioned it a few times that she'd like to get into it and here and there. But, you know, when kids are at that age, you know, she's 9, you know, they bounce off walls so bad. One day they want to be the play with brats, and the next day it's Scooby-Doo. And, you know, the next day they might want to race go-karts or bicycles. Today it's rollerblading, so... You know, it's 25 below outside here, and we're rollerblading in the garage. So, it's, you know, it'd be kind of neat if she did, but, you know, I definitely wouldn't push it on her. And, you know, it's probably a good thing that it scares her a little bit. She is a little bit scared of racing, and I guess if you're not scared of it, I don't think you should probably get in a car. So
there you go.
Anybody who's not scared of it on any given day should just probably get out, because that's when you're going to get hurt. So... I wouldn't push it on her, but I'd definitely, you know, let her do the things she'd done and try to do it the way that I did it when I was younger.
Donnie, do you own your own team?
Yes, it's a family-owned team with my parents and our businesses do own the team.
Donnie, how many cars does it take to, you know, what kind of equipment do you have to have to
cars
be able to
motors.
Do the whole year? How many cars and so forth do you have to have?
Well, we've done it before on two or three cars, which is pretty minimal. We run one car right up to the Nationals, put a new car together at the Nationals, and run it there on in. And, you know, that's an ideal year when you can do that. But as hard as you run the motors anymore, you know, a good motor will last 8 to 10 nights at most. We don't push them any harder than that. The cars themselves, we run them until we bend them. You know, the steel doesn't really wear out. The components on the cars do. A lot of little components is what we have to replace on a day-to-day basis, and like rear ends and front spindles and hubs. And, you know, guys really have the technology and the equipment now to make that stuff out of such good materials and make it so precise that unless you bend it or hit something with it, it's going to last a long time. So that's, you know, always pretty neat. But we do a lot of preventive maintenance that's probably unnecessary, but, you know, just so we feel better about ourselves and what we do with our equipment and how we take care of it to keep it from, you know, getting completely wore out. And, you know, on a bad year, we've seen, I remember there was a year when Steve Kinzer come back from NASCAR, he wrecked, you know, 14 cars in 1 year, and that's probably about as many as you're going to wreck. But, you know, if you have a year last year like Chad Kaminaugh did, he wrecked quite a few things, and just nothing was his fault. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So on an average, we probably try to run 4 or 5 cars throughout the year and try to make that work.
Do you have special cars for certain tracks or special cars in general, or are they just cars?
Just cars. Everything we run the same way. Every once in a while, you get a little idea to try to run something a little different. And, you know, the problem with that is it takes you a couple nights to get it figured out. And, you know, what you give up them couple nights is the hard part. You know, if you give up points or you give up wins or what have you. So, you know, we just run the same thing every night. In fact, it's believe it or not, we try to go into every racetrack and start our baseline setup everywhere we go the same. And that's, you know, we've got a setup where it seems to work fairly well and get us fairly decent that way.
Donnie, you've been racing for 12 years. Have you always raced on the dirt?
Yeah, when I raced pavement, it was all go-kart stuff, so I never got to race go-karts on dirt. But, you know, I did a little bit of Silver Crown racing quite a few years ago, and, you know, I do actually have a pavement sprint car sitting over at Scott Bennett's place in Indiana, that I run at the, was actually going to try to qualify for the little 500 one time, and I did get to race it at Anderson, but, you know, we had a conflicting schedule date with the World of Outlaws, so I missed it. But, you know, other than the few little fiddling around pavement races, everything I've done has been on dirt.
With the advent of Steve Kinzer coming back, you mentioned him a minute ago, is that going to help validate if you can have another year like you had last year, even with his return? Is that going to make you feel better about your year? Or, I mean, I know it's great to win all those races and to win a championship, but with him coming back, people have got to still be thinking, hey, here he comes again, man, we got to deal with this again.
Well, the thing you got to remember is those guys only raced 30-some times last year, and we raced, you know, 80 times. So, you know, that really puts us at an advantage. We were able to do things, you know, on more nights that they weren't racing than they raced all together. So, you know, it really gives you an advantage. You can't step back and run the few races that they did and try to be as competitive. I mean, there's guys that can do it here and there, but it's not going to be an every night thing. And I think that's what you've seen in Florida is, you know, you've seen, you know, Steve didn't have things going the way he wanted, and he's searching really hard for things to try to find something that's going to be like the miracle fix. And we've seen him running different cars and different motors and just different wings and all kinds of things, kind of looking for that magic combination that certain guys find. And, you know, it didn't really change anything. So those guys will eventually get their paces up there, definitely where they were in the past. It's just going to take a little time when you get racing every day. There, you know, they'll be game on. But, you know, it's all them nights that until then that's going to kind of make the difference. And it doesn't matter to me whether, you know, if those guys would have come back and raced or not. You know, I've raced against them for 10 years, and I learned a lot of things from them and had a lot of fun racing with them. But I definitely wasn't the guy who said, hey, I don't want to race against them anymore. They kind of went away, and I continued to do the same thing that I'd done in the past. So that's just the way it pulled it out, and we're glad that everybody's back together today.
Are you a little disappointed, though? Because I was when I found out that IROC wasn't returning, and that meant that you might not get your opportunity to do that, and I thought that would be really cool to see you go IROC. Would you have gone if they had offered?
Yeah, you bet. I really was looking forward to that. I don't think that you can totally count IROC out of the picture. If they get a sponsor, I'm pretty sure they're going to run their series. It's just not going to happen straight away. But, there's that great possibility that it's not going to. But, yeah, that would have been pretty neat. Definitely would have enjoyed that. But, we can't – it's water under the bridge. We're not going to dwell on it. We're just going to try to set our sights on winning another championship this year and see what happens. But, it kind of says something about the state of racing altogether when you take an organization like IROC and they have trouble finding a sponsor. It just tells you what it's like for the rest of us to try to find sponsors or guys that don't have them. And those of us that do have them, how hard it is to keep them and how hard it, you have to work to keep them happy.
You know, it sounds like from just listening to you talk here tonight, it sounds like that not only you have a tremendous amount of discipline in what you do, but there's an incredible amount of discipline probably involved in keeping a team successful at the level you're racing at. Tell us a little bit about how that works behind the scenes.
Well, it's not an easy thing. What we do with three guys on a team is probably better than having four because you get too many and things get a little out of hand, but faces are going to change in these organizations, and it's they've changed in mind quite frequently. I had a crew chief here for a year, and Casey Kane obviously had a bigger checkbook to write him a big check, and he's gone. Those sort of things happen. So if I was to stand back and not know what was going on with my race team and my engines and my cars and basically the whole operation, I'd be a fool, because when faces change tomorrow, that leaves me in the dark. I don't know where anything's at. I don't know what's going on. And, 4 or 5 years ago, I said, hey, this isn't the way I want to do things. I need to take charge of this operation. I need to be involved 110% of the time. And I've done that. And it's not an easy situation. It's very hard on everybody, especially when it's a father-son team. You're going to have disagreements on what you do here or there. But generally, you do what's best for the race team and everybody around it in general. So it is also fun. On the other hand, it's there's more satisfaction in winning races. There's more satisfaction in winning championships. Everything you do, your luck is created, I believe, sometimes by hard work. And I definitely have put in some hard work, and my race team still continues to put in a large amount of hard work, and they know that it pays off every time they get to victory lane. So it has its good points and its bad points, but it's something you have to stay on. You can't just take one day off here and say, okay, I'm not going to worry about this today, because in racing, it's not like that. Every day is important, and every opportunity you skip is one you could have learned from. So it's just the way we look at things.
Well, you see a lot of these Winston Cup guys coming in and buying teams and basically buying drivers and the rest of the team. Have you been approached by any of them?
No, I haven't. I think everybody that's in our sport understands that I'm not the kind of guy that is just going to go out ride hunting or hopping around. I mean, my family gets as much satisfaction and as much enjoyment out of winning races as I do. And if it's something that we continue to operate it as a business and it's on the positive end, there's really no need to have someone else involved. But some of those guys have the ability to take race cars to the wind tunnel and have these high dollar engine programs to try to get ahead. And at the end of the day, I think it's more gratifying doing things your own way and keeping it more in house. But I've never really had much interest in that, but you never know. I guess it depends how the situation is, and there's some guys out there that are car owners out there that say someday, hey, I absolutely have to have that guy in my car to win a race, and they might not take no for an answer, so they might make things you know, sweet enough to where it may make you change your mind. But, you know, my family's always been a big part, and, you know, without having them a big part, it probably wouldn't be as much fun.
I tell you what, now, that makes me like you even more, because even at the local level, that's what it's all about, families on a Saturday night going out to the local track and enjoying time together and so forth. And to see that you're still got your family orientation at this level is really awesome, because not a lot of the guys up and down that pit road do. They all go for, you know, somebody's got some money and they got to move it on to another car, another kind of car, or another driver. And the family gets left behind sometimes. And it's just so cool to know that you are there, your family's there, they're enjoying it as much as you are and being involved. And that's just, like, top-notch stuff, man, in my book.
Yeah, it is. It's fun, you know, even when it comes to, you know, little things like the T-shirts. You know, my mom, she does all that. And, you know, she could very easily hire somebody to do it and make it probably a better situation. But she enjoys doing it herself. And, you know, she likes being around the racing. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, having a vending trailer, she doesn't get to see the events every night. But, you know, she does get to see most of the features and enjoys doing what she's doing and just intermingling with the fans and talking with people. So, you know, it is fun to see that and, you know, realize that there's more than one person that gets satisfaction out of it.
Donnie, what takes you down under? Australia.
For me?
What takes you down under to Australia?
What takes me down under?
Yeah.
What got you there the first time and what kept you coming back?
Yeah.
Well, I got called by some people in Perth at the old Claremont Speedway, downtown Perth there, and you know, they wanted me to come over for what was called Speed Week, and, you know, it's like Ohio Speed Week. It's a series of races at a couple tracks, and it's four nights, and, you know, it's obviously a very big thing. And, you know, they brought me over, and we were exhibition racers, and I was able to win Speed Week. And, you know, going over to Western Australia, I met a bunch of great people, and it gave me the opportunity to come back the following year to drive for a guy I had become friends with, Shane Crickey, who was just turning 30 at the time, and he was a racer himself, and he'd gotten cancer and had to step out of the car and still wanted to own the car and put a driver in it. So I got to drive it, and we went out and run the World Series, which was really like the World of Outlaws then. And, you know, I think we won 7 or 8 of the 16 races they had, and, you know, just kind of made a big impact on it. And every year I've just, you know, gotten great opportunities to go back and be around great teams. You know, I've been going over there 8 or 9 years, and the guy I drive for now, I've been driving for 3 years, and I drove for another guy for 3 years before that. And, you know, everybody that I've been around over there has just been great. And, you know, obviously the weather's warmer in the winter there than it is here, but it also is a good time to learn, because no matter what happens, it's not like it counts against you, unlike, you know, races with the World of Outlaws. You kind of have to look at it as, you know, if you have a bad night, it's counted against you. Somebody gained on you if you're racing for a championship, and little things like that. So it's kind of a no-frill situation. It's a no-brainer. You just go do it and you enjoy yourself and have fun, and you know, go down there, and I've got to see a lot of the country and enjoy a lot of the scenery. So we're just glad to have been a part of it, and made a lot of fans over there, and definitely continue to go back today, because I don't want to disappoint anybody. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea that I don't enjoy coming there, because I really do. But you know, it's going to come that day when you have to spend the winter at home and kind of take the winter and kick back, but it probably won't be anytime soon.
It's a long way from Fargo, North Dakota to Australia. What are you guys treated like stars when you're there? I mean, what kind of relationship do you have with the fans there?
Well, the fans are obviously very appreciative to see people come over from America, and you know, when you go to the races here, when somebody's got a complaint at a race about one little thing, that even if it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, you hear about it. No matter what happens, if it's bad, you hear about it. The good things, you don't hardly ever hear about when people come to the races. You know, you do have some people come down and say, that was a great race, and it's generally the traditionalists in our sport, not the people, you know, who want to see change in the sport. When you go over there, you hardly ever see a person complain. They're always excited. They're really have the opportunity to interact with the racers, and it's really a neat situation. And the people are very, very appreciative of the sport that they have, and trying to keep it built up to the level that it is. So, You know, that's pretty neat. I've had people come up to me that we've been at places and they say, hey, would you come and stay the night at my house? You're more than welcome. We've got a spare bedroom. We've got a spare house, whatever. And it just, it happens every time you go somewhere. There's people like that. They stick their hand out. And, you know, that's very neat because, you know, it's very rare over here unless you know someone to have that happen to you here in the United States. But there's definitely not, I'm not downgrading the fans here. Believe me, they, you know, they're great people. And without them, we would never have built this sport up to the level it is. And, you know, we can't keep it here without the fans either. So, you know, we're glad for everybody's involvement. But there is a little bit of different pace. They're just, instead of looking at things sometimes that it was a bad show, they just, even if it was a bad show, they look at it, it just wasn't as good as the other night, you know.
Yeah.
But it was still good. So.
Hey, who's running DonnieShotsMotorsports.com, man? Awesome job there. And you got some great sponsors, it sounds like, for 2007 again.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of great people involved with us. You know, Parker Stores has been involved with us for a number of years, and we're really excited to have him back with us. We've had a great relationship over them years, and we've learned a lot about their company, and they've stuck a lot of faith in myself and my race team and my family, and, you know, we got to thank them for that. To be honest with you, as we speak here, I was just, when you called, hanging a new TV on my wall using my Snap-on tools, and, you know, Snap-on's a new sponsor for us this year. It's we're pretty excited to have a tool manufacturer, you know, being a marketing partner of ours. We've always been faithful Snap-on users, and now we get to be try to promote their product for them. So we're really excited about that as well. And, you know, we have a lot of product sponsors and a lot of little things that people help out with that mean a great deal, and there's so many of them to mention. I'd be here all night mentioning them, but, you know, it's just great to have, you know, even like Blue Beacon, they've been with us a number of years. They definitely try to keep everything clean for us with our trucks and trailers and all that, and we've had great support from everybody we've been involved with, and haven't had any complaints.
So you're getting ready to head out. Your next event is in California. Is that what the schedule is?
Yeah, we have this weekend off, and we race next weekend at Tulare.
I gotcha.
Wow. Well, man, this is awesome. It's awfully nice of you to take this kind of time to talk to us and stuff. But the information that you have and the travels that you get to make and still doing it, you know, on a family kind of budget and everything else.
That's just awesome.
It's just really neat. I mean, this is like, I don't know if everybody realized. Everybody looks at those cars at the World of Outlaws and goes, oh, there's big money behind every one of them. And here we are, the guy's still going, you know, year to year on whatever the family can hang together with.
So, Donnie, before we let you go, what besides, you know, obviously you spend a lot of time with your family when you're home in Fargo. What do you do? What other kind of things are you involved in during the week? You know, you have other hobbies and things that you do?
Oh, man, I got all kinds of stuff I'm involved in. You know, it's been I built a house a couple years ago, and I've been, you know, very involved in that project trying to, you know, get everything exactly the way I wanted. And, you know, sometimes it's just fun to be able to mow your own grass. And this last summer I built a detached garage, and I done my own roof and built the building. And right now we're trying to finish the basement in my house, so... actually, the biggest thing that I've done here lately is I've accumulated a lot of really neat trophies and a lot of racing uniforms and just unique artifacts that have come about from racing. And I've built a movies theater / racing, you know, racing room, and I'm trying to get that finished. So everything I do is kind of home improvement or pet related or just things to try to keep me away from...
Keeping me away from
racing and
you got to turn
other
the
things for a few hours.
Donnie, you got to turn the detached garage into the Donnie Schatz Museum, then, man. Give me a reason to come to Fargo, North Dakota.
Yeah.
Give me something to look at.
I wouldn't mind working on it this winter here, but unfortunately, it's still 25 below outside. So
oh, man.
She's a little bit too cold even to be inside over there. But
it was great to catch you guys at Volusia, and I'll tell you, we are
awesome.
We've had wonderful experience with the public relations people at the World of Outlaws. Have been wonderful to us, and we're going to talk to one of your fellow racers, Randy Hannigan, here in a few minutes and see what he's got on his mind. We really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us, Donnie.
Well, thank you, guys.
All right, DonnieShotsMotorsports.com,
thank you.
Folks. Go
thank
see
you
it. And Donnie, appreciate it again, man. Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Donnie.
See you later, guys.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Wow, the cool world champion of the World champion. Of Outlaws.
Mr. Hosel, what are your comments on that?
Anywhere from 3 to 14 cars a year. DJ.
What do you think?
Depends on how you run.
It's amazing. It's just amazing that he's doing it as a family business. I mean, obviously, growing up when he was a kid racing, and he's kept his mom and dad involved. You know, it's a cool thing. You know, just like myself, my parents are involved, and we directly do everything together.
And you don't have any plans on somebody coming along going, hey, I want to take you racing, but you got to leave them behind. That's not what you're looking at either.
No. When I was younger, I was looking for the big picture. But now, you know, when you try to do those types of things, there is no loyalty. You know, one minute they love you, the next minute, oh, well,
you're out of a ride.
Yep. So yep. I'm over that part. I just want to have fun racing, and that's why I've come back and doing what I'm doing. And I've got a great pit crew that has fun doing it too. So.
Yeah, I could tell. I was watching you every now and then while we were doing that interview. I could tell this guy was giving you some things to think about, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's just good to hear, you know, a lot of his stories and you know how personal he is, and he's a real person. He don't tell you a story; he tells you the truth.
Champion of the World of Outlaws. Last year.
You know, this is one of those phrases that's like goes back way back to the 70s. But you know what? After about 5 minutes into talking to that man, that's a heavy dude, man.
Yeah, you know he's a racer.
Ain't no doubt. That's a serious, serious person.
Yeah, yep. He's got his stuff together. There's no doubt about that.
So we're
going
to take a quick break, come back, and spend a few more minutes with DJ Hosel and then Randy Hannigan.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you got it. Snook River Grill, 2505 East Manatee Avenue. You could be here, too. Just next up, Randy Hannigan and Penthouse Sponsorship. Should be awesome.
Turn to the power of Short Track America Motorsports Entertainment, Carnac.com, for all local and national racing news from all over the world.
That's Carnac, Carnac.com.
Carnac.com.
Evergreen Development Construction Company is more than just a land clearing business. They help you from site inspection to blueprint design and construction. CJ Carberry and the Evergreen crew guarantee your satisfaction in every aspect of site preparation and facility construction. Call Evergreen Development Construction Company in Tampa at 813-202-8008. That's 813-202-8008. Or give them a shout at 813-478-8847. Evergreen Development and Construction Company, the only company you'll have to call. Evergreen.
McAllister Sports Management is a full-service firm specializing in all aspects of motorsports communications. Specific services include website development, program management, sponsorship acquisition and development, public relations, promotions, corporate hospitality, and strategic marketing. We can design, produce, and distribute autograph cards, feature stories, and arrange photo and video opportunities. We help you maintain a continuous contact with local, regional, and national media. For more information, log on to McAllisterSportsManagement.com or call 352-804-0078.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Tim Brink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
Hey, we're back at the Snook River Grill, and you just raced back in. If you heard that car go by, that was pretty cool because I just happened to click
on... They're racing in the parking lot, Bill.
They're racing in the parking lot.
They're racing in the
I
parking lot.
I happened
lot.
To click on the Randy Hannigan website, and he's got this thing that comes up that does a little racing by you. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
DJ, for a while there, though, you were building race cars. You'd gotten out of the pretty much out of the seat, and you were building race cars. What drew you back in?
Just the love of the sport and the competitiveness. I just enjoy driving. I've done it my whole life, and there was a time where I just needed a break. You know, you race every weekend, and sometimes you get burnt out. And well, I took a break, and before I knew it, I wanted to get back in it. You know, so financially, it's a burden, especially when you're doing it, you know, with family. And on local levels, it's hard to find sponsors that can really give you a huge monetary, you know, supplement to help you do what you want to do. So there's a lot of sponsors that do help out in a lot of different ways, such as Go15. They're sponsoring the car this year. They're also an associate sponsor for TBRA. I've got Hose and Hydraulics and some other companies, my dad's company, DHC Construction. But to get that one big check that can fund you for the year so you don't have any worries about that and you can just worry about racing, it's not like that on a local level, and I don't think that's like that for many people.
You stepped up and were doing like a little bush racing, wasn't it?
Or... Yeah, well, I, like I said, I wanted to make it to the next level and push that direction. But you know, I was trying to do it on talent alone, and that's hard to do. You know, if you talk to the teams up there and you say, well, we got a sponsor in line, oh, come on up. They want to talk to you. But as soon as something falls through, they don't, you know, no matter how well you've tested, how fast you are, you know, you're about right back out the door as quick as you came in. So it's a hard way. It's a hard way to live.
You have about as much the chance of doing it that way as you do winning the Florida lottery or the Illinois lottery.
Probably less chance. To be honest with you.
It's very, very tough. What is the, like, on the, I mean, obviously you spend a lot of time working on your cars and like, what's it like, and what's the toughest part about this whole thing for you as a, you know, racer on a week to week basis?
Probably the toughest thing is, you know, you put all the time and effort into building a good car and being fast every week, and just the simplest thing can ruin that for you and have make you start all over. You know, just the same position I'm in right now, you know, one little mistake and I've got a pile of parts on the ground and I've got to start over, you know. So that's probably the toughest part, but, it brings you back to the track knowing that, number one, the fans are out there. They love watching what's going on. You know, the sprint cars, just to watch, are tremendous. They're a lot of fun to be around. They're fun to work on. You know, I've got a great pit crew. They're all enjoying what they're doing. So that's what makes it fun to come back. And all the work that goes into it, it really doesn't seem like work. You know, it's more like a hobby.
Yeah. So it would be, if you didn't really have a lot of, if you didn't love doing this, it could be really easy to get, like,
frustrated
and say, to heck with this.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's go bass fishing.
Yeah, it's definitely a passion.
You were trying to get that fishing thing out of Donnie Schatz, weren't you?
Why?
Absolutely.
Why are we? I was waiting for him to say ice fishing.
Yeah, I
why
started
we,
to. But
why are we
I
all
must
on
be the only
fishing
driver that doesn't like fishing.
Well, fishing's in his bio.
I must be the only driver that doesn't like fishing.
Yeah, well, I don't like fishing either because I don't have the patience.
I like
for
eating it.
Me neither.
They
eat the fish.
Yeah, they're not biting right now. Forget about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so, like, did you, your dad and your other relatives have been involved in racing? I mean, you obviously, if you started doing this when you were five, your family's been involved in this. Yeah. Did your dad race?
Yeah, my dad, he raced drag cars, and he also ran some go-karts on a national level. And when I was five, I mean, even before I was five, when he was driving down the road, I was always grabbing the steering wheel and wanting to drive, you know, and so he bought me a go-kart for my birthday, and next thing you know, I had the grass wore out in the backyard, and just every day after school, I was out there playing until dark. And he saw that I had talent, and he said, let's go to the racetrack and see what you can do.
So is the competitive thing in the genes here? And is this something
Must be. But the funny part is you know, I'm really competitive, but that's not what I go to the track thinking about. I think about taking what I've got and making the best of it, and whatever comes of that, you know, happens. So, you know, for driving, for me, it just comes natural. I don't even have to work at it. I don't get nervous, and no matter what I've ever done, you know, I fell asleep in the car before a race before they've had to wake me up, you know, just because I'm that relaxed in what I do. So, I enjoy driving.
I was going to ask you, because it seems like even at your young age, and how old are you coming in?
31.
Okay. At your age, you've already started to what I would say is giving back. A lot of guys enter the career 5 years old. You get to 18, you're burning it up until you're in the 40s or 50s, and then you start to give back a little bit. You've already started to give back with helping other people, building cars and so forth. And just being around the racetracks, I think, is something that you really enjoy, whether you're racing or not. Tell me more about that. What kind of things do you look to do when you're not going to go racing, but you're at the track?
I look to, like, I got some friends, Bill Hoffman. They just built a truck to run the Fast Truck Series, and then there's also another series that runs in the state of Florida. I help them out as best I can. I mean, they do all the work, but I try to give them some ideas to work with. Bobby Baldwin, he bought my modified that I built, and he went out and won two championships back-to-back at Bradenton, which I thought was exceptional. I thought that was really cool that he did that. It feels good to be able to help people and see a positive thing that come out of it, basically. So, you know, situation with the sprint car I'm in right now is I told the race car, and for me to get another chassis quickly from the same provider, it's not going to happen. So I've had to, basically build a jig, and I'm going to start to build a car. I'm going to start on it tomorrow. So
cool. Let's take a minute and talk to maybe another World of Outlaw driver here.
Well,
what do you got, Rick?
He's originally from San Jose, California. He now resides in Pittsburgh, Indiana. The Hurricane, Randy Hannigan. How you doing tonight, Randy?
Oh, not too bad. Just trying to pull into my driveway right now.
Uh-oh.
We got here. We're in this pretty bad snowstorm that's coming through central Indiana right now, and it's little different than the way it was here last couple of days in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah, we just got off the phone with Donnie Schatz. He snowed in up there in Fargo.
Yeah, it's this is pretty crazy here right now.
So you won at East Bay.
Yeah, we did. Car was really, really good there at East Bay, and you know, we got off to a pretty good start there, and you know, everything went pretty good down there in Florida compared to the years past.
Is that a good start to your season so far? You've finished well in some races. The World of Outlaws wasn't too bad for you either. You got East Bay a win and so forth. Is that a good start? Make you feel good about your season, or are you really you know, kind of semi disappointed because you really wanted to win them all?
No. I mean, it's good to get started on a, you know, on a good note by winning a race down there in Florida, especially, you know, coming out of the box with we changed some stuff around on our cars and went to a little longer wheelbase car. And, you know, it was good. It was really, really good just to get out and be competitive right off the get-go rather than, you know, a couple of years past down in Florida. We've hurt some motors first night out. And then you're behind the game, and you know you're struggling and trying to get the motors to run because you know, this, that, and the other. But it was really, really good to get started on a good note.
Randy, how important has it been for Penthouse to come on board as a sponsor for your car?
It's been really, really good. You know, it was really important that we got them on there, and you know, when Penthouse come aboard, you know, it raised some eyebrows. You know, because of being Penthouse, the magazine, and, you know, but they come aboard, and they're real happy, and we're real happy, and we're just trying to work together to make this thing a stronger race team and get a Penthouse much more exposure, you know, for them, and they deserve a lot more than what they have right now.
It's got to be more fun than a paint company or something.
Yeah, there's got to be a few perks.
It's definitely, you know, it definitely raises people's eyebrows and you know, good conversation piece, you know, when you're sitting around and you talk to people about it.
Did anybody from World of Outlaws or anybody give you any kind of hesitation about having that as a sponsor?
No, they didn't. You know, I mean, the World of Outlaws, I talked to them about it first, and you know, we did it everything in really, really good taste, and you know, nothing explicit. You know, everything's, you know, it's just a magazine, and you know, it's a pretty good magazine at that. But you know, we did everything really good, and we haven't had any flack at all from anybody. You know, we had one or two emails that the race team got that, you know, that people weren't happy with it, or you know, or so. But you know, and then this year we've kind of run into a little blockade that we're coming up to here in May, but we'll deal with that when we get to that.
Well, I know that you may have a few people that are always going to be complainers, but I think it's pretty cool. Now, I ask you in the trailer, how in the world did you get this sponsorship? And I want you to tell that story. How did you go about it? And I want people to realize the kind of dynamic guy you are and who made this happen.
Actually, you know, we were talking one night about a couple of things, me and my crew guys, and you know, some, you know, a couple of infomercials come on, and you know, we were talking about demographics and you know what would overlay really good with the World of Outlaws and the you know the people that attend World of Outlaw races, and you know, we come up with Penthouse. So I talked to my marketing guy from Ideas and Images, and we just gave them a call, and you know, lo and behold, they're really, really perceptive to it, and you know, and said that they'd entertain the idea, and you know, we talked to them a couple times, and they agreed to do it, and they just wanted to kind of, you know, make some small steps in this, and you know, we made it real, real presentable for them, and the car, you know, the way that we lettered the car and made it real tasteful. And they're really, really happy with that. And we got a lot of good response out of it, and they got a lot of good exposure last year from it. And we're trying to increase that fan base this year. And you know, we got off to a really good start, and you know, it is increased. And the more subscriptions that we you know, we get from the racing helps the race team And so anybody that subscribes will definitely be helping our race team.
Well, you know what? I finally got to meet Paul this past weekend up at Volusia. And out of everybody I've met, I think Paul would probably be the one to get that Penthouse sponsorship done.
Paul Joyner is Paul Joyner.
Yeah, he's a little energetic.
Yeah, he is, man. But, you know, the other thing about the Penthouse sponsorship, you not only get national exposure in that magazine, you get international exposure.
Exactly. And that was a good thing, that bringing this to the World of Outlaws and the sprint car racing. We're bringing an international sponsor to the table here. You know, I mean, you know, they're everywhere, from Europe to Australia to New Zealand to, you know, to Africa. I mean, they're everywhere. And, you know, you can go to a lot of the, you know, magazine shops and, you know, lo and behold, there'll be a Penthouse magazine there. And, you know, we're trying to get it, and we will have a feature article in Penthouse about the race team and myself. And so we're looking forward to that and bringing international flavors to sprint car racing here in the United States.
Make sure they give us a mention in there, huh?
Yeah, no doubt about it, because, I mean, I've literally been in Germany, and the pictures are the same, but the writing's different, so... It goes everywhere around the world. There's no doubt about it. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about your history, because I noticed in your bio that, like, 1993, you were the man when it comes to racing out in California. It looks like you did an amazing feat in 10 of 11 races in 360s you won, and 5 out of 12 events in the 410s you won, and you wound up winning 2 track championships in the same year.
Yeah, that was a pretty historic year for myself in California. We were racing San Jose weekly. It was my, you know, fourth year in sprint cars, and, you know, we were fortunate enough to have a really good sponsor in Celebrity Dodge at that time, and they wanted to, being the Dodge dealership, we were back then trying to really get Dodge involved into sprint car racing. And, you know, there's a lot of history there that people don't know, but I mean, I could probably say that Celebrity Dodge, they were doing they were California's number one Dodge dealer in the early 90s. And when they were sponsoring me, they went to Dodge, and we were trying to put together a steel block 360 for Dodge and Mopar at that time out in California, to be one of the first teams to be running a Dodge Mopar. And then, you know, a couple of years later, we did actually get a set of heads, and we were working on them, and Earl Gurdy was doing the head work, and, you know, we were really going forward with this deal. And then Dodge decided to kind of take a step back a little bit, and then, you know, back in 1996, you know, they came out with Gary Stanton. But I could at least say that we were on the ground floor at that time with Mopar. But back then, you know, I had, like I said, I had Celebrity Dodge as being a good sponsor. And, you know, they were able to get me all the equipment and everything to win the championships with, and we did for them and ourselves. And it was a really good outbreak year for my team, Terry Hannigan Racing, and myself.
I tell you what, now you got something on your wall that nobody else, I bet, in the World of Outlaws may have, or maybe there several of them do. But you got that same year. You added to your sensational year with a Motoring Press Association's Open Wheel Driver of the Year. How cool was that?
Yeah, that was. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, when it happens to you, you really don't realize the meaning of it until you get down the road a little bit, and then you take a look back, and you know, you could say, Jesus, you know, I mean, that was pretty ironic how that worked out. But yeah, you know, being the, you know, Motoring Press Driver of the Year, That was really, really good for myself. And I mean, I really enjoyed going to that banquet that they had there for it, and, you know, just being able to be a part of that was really good.
Now, Randy, we talked to Donnie a little bit earlier about racing down in Australia. You had a lot of luck down there in Australia too.
Yeah, we did. You know, I started going down there in 1994, and it was, coming from California, I hadn't been back to the Midwest at all. I went to the Midwest in 1994. I went to Knoxville in 94. And so I really hadn't left California much, except just to go to Knoxville. But when I got to Australia, that was a real eye-opener for me, and being in a different country and, you know, away from everything. And, you know, fortunately we took our own cars down there, so it was, that was really good. And so we had pretty superior equipment to some of the teams down there back in 1994.
Does it feel like you've been racing as long as you already have?
No, it don't.
I know.
I mean, because every time we go out, we learn something new about the race car or motors or, you know, tires, and it's a never, you know, ending learning experience, you know, being a sprint car driver or working on them.
I tell you what, man, you're going to have to add to your bio, because 2007 doesn't look like it's going to be too bad for you either with the start you've had.
Yeah, you know, I mean, everything's been really good, and I just like to keep adding, you know, I'd like to add as many wins as I can, you know, in 07, whether it be one more or 10 more, you know, I mean, we just really working on trying to make a better race team and being more consistent, you know, I mean, people can look at the, you know, my stats from the last couple of years, you know, and it's been highs and lows and highs and lows, but, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, you, when you're high, you got to ride the wave, and when you're low, you just got to keep building on it to get back on top of that wave.
Randy, do you own your own team, run your own team, and how big is your team? How many members are part of your gang?
Well, as for the team, my brother Terry, he owns it. He's the sole proprietor of Terry Hannigan Racing, and you know, he lets me run it, the way that I think it needs to be run, and sometimes that's good, and I guess sometimes that's bad. But you know, he owns it. He pays for everything, and you know, as for the team, I've got Chris Steelwell. He's been with me for 3 years now, and I've got Steve Moulton. He's been with me for over a year now, and you know, as for a base team, it's a really good race team. You know, there's really no crew chief. We do it as a team. And we win as a team, we lose as a team, and, you know, if we crash, we crash as a team.
Randy, you've been doing this a while. You've been with the World of Outlaws. The World of Outlaws was on shaky ground for a while. Looks like the resurgence is really good for it this year.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the World of Outlaws, they've done a good job of, you know, of getting their, I guess, all their ducks in a row. And, you know, some of the ducks, I guess, decided to play in a little different pond last year, but, you know, all the ducks are back on, you know, in a row, and, you know, it's going strong. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there, and it's going to be feast or famine this year.
Well, you know, looking at that pit board Sunday, 51 cars qualifying for that race. That was just an awesome thing to see. Now, you got a thing on your website that says Mason's Pits. Is that your son?
Yes, Mason's my son, and he's 14 months old, and my fiance Angie, she keeps up the web page, and you know, there's going to be some new stuff coming up here pretty quick on that website. You know, I mean, I've done over, you know, say 100 races in the last since the beginning of last year when Mason was born in 2005 in November. And so he's been with me just about to every race that I've been to, except for maybe five races, maybe 10 at the very most, since he's been born. So he's been around the racing since he came into this world. So he's got a lot of tales to tell about being on the road. And, you know, a lot of people read his little web page there, and they get a good kick out of it. You know, I mean, it's funny, you know, I mean, I could walk through the pit area and people ask me, hey, where's Mason? Where's Mason? I mean, they're not even worried about myself or anything else, you know. Hey, where's Mason at? So it's been good having him around the whole time.
Yeah, that's got to be awesome. Pretty cool.
So when you show up at the track on and, you know, you're going to race at a certain place, are you already set up for that track, or do you got to do a lot of work to get prepared for that particular track once you get there?
That's a good question. A lot of times we have notes from the previous races that we've been at that racetrack, and you know, we use them as a good reference point. I mean, sometimes they're really close, and then sometimes they're off because of, you know, maybe track conditions or the weather, or, you know, maybe they changed the dirt in the racetrack. But you know, the biggest thing when we go to the racetrack is getting the right gear on the race car. And, you know, we used our references from the past for getting the gear really close, because sometimes, you know, you'll have run a different car than what you're running now, and it's a good thing to look at, but it's not always a good thing to always just stick the same what you had in that race car from previous.
Yeah, because I talked to a few people up at Volusia, and they said the track this year was totally different than what it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, as you can see, that we had, like, out of the three nights of outlaw racing, we had three different racetracks. And, I mean, it throws everybody a curveball, but that's what makes it interesting sometimes, because, you know, some teams adapt really well and some teams don't, you know. We raced there six nights, and out of the six nights, we probably had six different completely racetracks. I mean, one time it's against the wall on the outside, and then the next night it's it's against the wall on the inside because it has rubber down. So it's just one of them things. You just got to be prepared for it.
Hey, I got to ask you now. You're a guy from San Jose, California. You're living in Pittsboro, Indiana. How in the world did you get the name the Hurricane?
I got the name Hurricane from a friend of mine out in California. Back in 1988, he was the Rookie of the Year, and his sponsor gave him a trip to Hawaii. So he decided to take me along, and we went over there and had a good time. And on our way over there, we got to talking about his nickname, and then he labeled me as the Hurricane. So it stuck. It has stuck with me ever since 1988, and some people like it and some people don't.
Hurricane Hannigan, it works for me. I just thought it was unusual. What was his nickname by chance?
His name was the Rocket Man.
Oh, okay. Well, we've seen
his
some
name
of those.
It was Rick Martin, the Rocket Man Rick Martin.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, man, it's a long way from San Jose, but anything changing in your life with you coming up on that big 4-0 number?
Wow, things change constantly, I'm not into big change a lot. I like to keep everything about the same. You know, I mean, my race cars have looked the same for years, and you know, I mean, from the way we put them together to the way they look, you know, everything has just stayed the same. So this year was a big change for me in the way the race car looked, and then coming up, like you said, on 40 years old, I'm not sure what I'll change at that point, but I'm sure, you know, something's bound to change besides going from 30, you know, being in your 30s to your 40s. So, myself and Tim Schaefer, we were born on the same day in the same year. So, I got to talk to him, and we'll come up with a game plan about changing something.
Well, I tell you what, having gone now and seen a World of Outlaws show, and gotten the opportunity to walk in the trailer and say hi to you and stuff. You guys, all of you, actually all the drivers, seem to be very personable. Even though you're very intense and you're thinking about what you got to change on the car or do something, you're still willing to stop, talk to the fans briefly, thank them for, you know, giving you a big heads up and appreciating what you do.
Yeah, funny you say that. The other night, myself and I think it was Justin Henderson, we were sitting there talking, and a guy come up and wanted an autograph, and so he got an autograph card and we gave him an autograph, and he was just kind of blown away how relative easy it was to get into the pits and come up and get that close to the race cars and talk to the drivers. And he's a big NASCAR fan, and he's like, you know, people have told me about these races, and he went to the, you know, that was his first sprint car race, and he was just amazed at how easy it was for him to get a driver's autograph or to even, you know, touch the tire on the race car or get up close and personal with the race car. And, so we gained an instant fan that way. And, you know, I think more and more we'll get fans like that don't realize the accessibility is that they can get to, you know, talk to the drivers, meet them, get an autograph and, talk to them about, anything, because that's just what we do as race cars. That's really not who we are sometimes. And, we're just regular people.
Yeah, and with the advent of ESPN2 coming on board and, you know, broadcasting you guys' event, the fans that, you know, don't know how accessible you guys are, it's just going to make the World of Outlaws take off even more.
You know, Randy, Bill, Rick, and myself, my name's Jack Smith, the three of us have all been involved in racing media for 10 years or more, and, you know, I've dealt with traveling series. I said this before tonight, you know, we've dealt with traveling series all over the country. Never did we have – we'd never dealt with the World of Outlaws until this year, and it has blown us away how open and accessible the whole thing was. I had no idea, and it's absolutely floored all three of us. And it's got to be why you guys are so successful.
You know, it is, but, you know, I mean, it's just amazing how many people really don't know about sprint car racing. You know, when you say – know you race cars, you know, some people think, you know, you race with Dale Earnhardt or Jeff Gordon or whatever, you know, and you know, they just really don't have an idea of what sprint car racing is about, you know, from, you know, personal standpoint. I mean, you can't find a better race to go to than a sprint car race. I mean, even a bad sprint car race is probably better than any good NASCAR race, you
no
know
doubt.
Just because the excitement, you know, it's I've not drawn it. Out over 3 or 4 hours, and you know, there's always somebody that's, you know, in contention to be passed or going for the lead, or, you know, there's always something going on in a sprint car race.
Three wide wheels up.
Flick, there's something that's going to happen. And, you know, NASCAR is, you know, that's where the money's at. And I think, you know, ultimately we wish we could make that type of money, you know, as long as it was doing something like sprint car racing. And, you know, if we can get their fan base and their sponsors, well, you know, sprint car racing will grow to the, you know, to the area that it needs to be. You know, maybe not on live TV, because sprint car racing is very, very hard to do live on TV. But if we can get it to where, like, ESPN and Speed and all that are going to do it, where it's tape delayed the next day, it'll make our sport and make our fan base a lot bigger than what it is right now.
Well, if there's anything we can do to help that along, we'll damn sure
anytime.
Do it.
And we got to have you back, because I haven't even gotten to the portion of asking you questions about your workout routine and so forth, because you're in awesome shape, man, from what I could see. And when you gripped my hand, you about broke it.
Yep. Yeah, we're up against the clock, Randy, but I'll tell you, man, we really appreciate you taking the time to spend some time with us tonight, and we'll be following you guys and talking to you later in the year. How about that?
All right. No problem. Anytime. You know, I'd love to be back on the show and give you updates on what's going on here in the big sprint car world.
Yeah, we'll get with you and let you know how this is archived on the internet, so all your fans can listen to it.
All righty, that'd be great.
All right, last question out the door. The Penthouse girls will show up at the track sometimes, you said?
What race will you be at next?
that'd be the trick. We appreciate you, man. I was just trying
to find out. There will be some Penthouse pets at races to come, and you know, I don't know if we'll put it on the internet, on, you know, put a schedule out when they're going to be there, because
maybe that'll be
a big surprise, but you know, that's something people can check back on my website at www.randyhannigan.com and check a schedule for when the Penthouse pets will be there. And I think, you know, I mean, we'll probably put it up on the internet, but you know, Houston in a couple of weeks, we're gonna do a show with the Penthouse Club, and you know, it's a lot of good things to come here in the very near future for Penthouse Racing and Randy Hannigan.
Don't tell anybody. Make them come to every race to look for them.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Talk to you later, Randy.
Yeah, that'll work. You know, I mean, it's amazing. We get a lot of questions. You know, where's the Penthouse pets? And you know, we were supposed to have one at the Chili Bowl this year, and you know, with the bad weather that came through there on Friday night, she wasn't able to show up. But you know, they're going to make that up and a few more here in the near future.
No problem, man. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon,
Randy Hannigan, ladies and gentlemen, the Hurricane from San Jose, California.
Hey, and for all our adult listeners, you can go to randyhannigan.com and you can get a 1-year subscription to Penthouse for $17.95.
Man, what a cool sponsor, huh?
No doubt, huh?
So DJ, you've been with us here all night tonight, and we've we've talked to a
couple. So how do you think
couple of the
Don
stars,
Ream?
What do you think?
Yeah, wait a minute, I got a question for you. How do you think Don Ream would feel if you had Swank on the side of your car?
I don't know. Maybe be cool, or something. It'll be a little smoother there. But either way, if they're bringing the money, I'm sure it'll be okay.
Yeah, but you know, like Jack was getting ready to say, you're just now starting your career in sprint car racing. You just heard the two top guys in the sprint car world. What do you think?
I think it's amazing. They're great guys to listen to. They're very well spoken, and not only that, they're fun to watch. I mean, I'm into sprint cars now, but for a long time, you know, I always focused on either go-karts or stock car racing, and I watched some World of Outlaws. I love watching them on TV, but never got up and close to them. And finally, when I was racing down at Bradenton, TBRA came by and raced, and I'm like, man, that is just too cool. I'd love to do that. And my dad wasn't too keen on it at first, but finally got him to wake up, and now he's having a lot of fun with it too.
There you go, man.
What's it like with just at you've done three races now, or two races? Did you race Monday night? You didn't race Monday.
No, did not race.
Okay,
Monday
so night. You raced the first two at Citrus and New Smyrna. When you guys come around and you do that four wide thing, what's that like being in the middle of it? What's that all about?
It's an awesome experience. Unfortunately, I had to start in the back, so I was on the back row. But just
well, being, you can see everything.
Oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Just seeing. I mean, the cars are taking up the entire racetrack. The fans are standing up, waving, and it's a thrill just to be. I mean, you're wheel to wheel all the way around the racetrack, and you got all those engines rumbling. You smell the alcohol burning. And it's a lot of fun. It definitely gets your blood pumping.
That was the impression I got when talking to you. It was just. I'm happy to be here, man. This is just an awesome experience.
Well, you've joined a great
club. Yeah, but
you
know what? You know what, though? It's your second race. It might have only been a B main, but you won.
Yeah, that was exciting. That was cool.
You didn't just win.
I mean, you walked a dog.
Those cars, buddy.
And you know, I got to say a lot of thanks to my dad for buying me good equipment right off the bat. You know, I bought a Dave Steele's car from last year. He won a lot of races in it. And Lenny, the car owner, and Todd, the crew chief, you know, they gave me a hand on getting me, you know, started and set up correctly.
Did Dave come down and say anything about, man, what'd you do to the car?
No, he didn't. Actually, I didn't see him, but I know Lenny and Todd did. They were like, let's see what's left of this thing. But they forewarned me if it's going to happen, it's going to happen big. And you know what? They were right.
Yeah,
well, get it out of the way.
Yeah.
It's only up from here. Right?
I hope.
Yeah, like I told everybody whenever we heard you were coming back and you were going to get me in sprint cars, be prepared because you come loaded and ready to go racing. There's no doubt about it.
So, I told Don, we've been talking to you up, man. We're telling you, you're bringing a lot of fans to this series. Now, are you going to be ready for DeSoto Super Speedway on the 17th?
No, being that we bent the frame, pretty much the only spare part I didn't have, so yeah. We're not going to be able to make that show, but we'll definitely be at the following race. And you know, I got to say, you know, TBRA is for a Florida state-run series, is the most professional series, even in a national level, that I've been a part of in a long time. Don, you know, he's a racer. You know, he wants to see good things happen. He listens to what you have to say. He's open-minded about things, and it's the first time it's been like that in a long time, and everybody involved has a smile on their face. You know, yeah, sure, there's a little bit of bickering, but that's just part of racing. But overall, yeah. I mean, there's a good vibe throughout the pits every time you go to the racetrack.
Are you going to come out to the track on Saturday night?
Most definitely. I'll definitely
You know what
there.
You need to do? You need to come over and see Rick Angie's up in the announcer booth and talk with him while you're up there, yeah, man.
No doubt.
Yeah, that'd be really, really cool. I would love it.
As long as he unlocks the door and lets me in.
DeSoto fans.
I'm on the outside anyway.
Yeah, but DeSoto fans would really love to hear from you. I know they would, and they'd all want to talk to you once they knew you were there, man. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there.
That'd
you know, that's
cool.
That's the first racetrack that I won my first stock car championship there, and the fans were always great there. And not only that, it's a fun racetrack. And another thing, too, I got to get back with New Smyrna. You know, a lot of people were complaining about tires and an issue with the track, but the track was perfectly smooth. There was a great surface to race on. Yes, there was a little bit of tire troubles, but there's so many variations with sprint cars that you can do to make them run fast. We tried to stay on the real neutral side instead of being loose, and our tire wear was perfect. So I think it really depended on how you had the car set up. This year we went with Bilstein shocks again, and Jim Hyland and Pat from a North Carolina store has really taken their time to work with me to make the tires last. And they have brought a lot of technical experience to the team, which has been tremendous.
Well, hopefully sometime in the middle of the season when you get a rebuilt and you're back to racing again, we'll get the car over and then people can see it right here.
Well, we got our next race at DeSoto for the TBRA. It'll be in April. So maybe we'll plan on having another TBRA show here.
Yeah, we can do that.
How about this? As soon as I get it together, I'll bring it by before I get to the racetrack. So
there you go.
You know it's in one piece.
before you race it. Now, Bill, next Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 17th, You and I are going to be at New Smyrna Speedway for the final night, and he's looking at him. He's over there.
That's what you keep telling
him. Yeah, I'm telling him. You're going to be there with me at the final night of the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing at New Smyrna Speedway, right down the road from Daytona. There's a ton of race fans in Florida going to be there. They're going to hang out.
There'll be some well-known people.
The Pete Orr Memorial 100 race. And I'm going to tell you, it's the last night of the World Series. We have a photo gallery, and we have on Karnak.com, we got photos from every going back years and years and from all kinds of different kinds of racing and events and different things. And we also, and in those galleries is a Pete Orr section of pictures from Pete Orr's life and career. And we also have in the Florida Stock Car Racing section of Karnak, there is a section of history. And it's not real big because, you know, we don't have a lot of help to get it all together, but we've been working it for a long time. Pete Orr is one of the legends. He's in the legends section. And there's articles and stuff in there about Pete Orr and a lot of great letters and things people have sent. And there's a photo gallery in there of Pete Orr stuff. Every month, month after month after month, over 2,000 people go click on those Pete Orr pictures from all over the country. It is absolutely amazing. Saturday night, we'll be giving away the...
Cool beans, baby. DJ
Pete Orr Memorial Award for this year, Sportsmanship Award. And we'll be there doing that.
This Saturday night, I'll be opening night. DeSoto Super Speedway, the TBRA Wing Sprints, Outlaw Modified, School Bus Figure Eights this Saturday night at DeSoto Super Speedway.
What did we do tonight here?
Oh, man, we did another three-hour show in 2 hours.
We talked to a bunch of people.
Randy Hannigan, Donnie Schatz. Of course, DJ was in the house. I want to thank him. Strolling Nolan.
Jerry Nolan. Buddy Brian, we didn't get to you, buddy. Lost your phone number, had the wrong number or whatever. We're sorry. We'll get to you next week.
Don't forget, in 2 weeks.
Some time.
Yeah. 2 weeks, the icebreaker. The grand marshal will be Dangerous Dan Toler.
That's
Dan
right. Next week, we're going to be talking to people from the ARCA series, the ASA. And, Bill, what's on your mind?
Steve Arpin, I wanted to say sorry, Steve. We'll get you next
week.
We'll
have definitely
a half hour
get
with
Steve.
You.
Yeah,
we didn't,
get Steve.
We didn't want to cut you short, so we'll get you next week.
Man. I don't know.
Take
guys.
It to the limit.
I think it's,
play the music, Bill.
It must be time to play something because we've played out. We've gone into about 10 minutes of overtime.
That's all right.
All right.
Thanks so much again, folks. Snook River Grill, you want to be here next week. It's going to be awesome. I think we're going to get a surprise phone call from Lynn St. James. Some other things happening in the wings, and we'll let you know.
Real Racing USA, every Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m., right here live from the Snook River Grill, 2505 Merritt Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. Y'all have a good night. We'll see you at the races. Good night now.
Making time.